everybody. Nice to see you all here today. So I'll call this meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors to order. And let us all, if you'll be so good as to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. So may we have the flag? That would be you, Leah. There we go. Excellent. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice
for all.
Okay, I see that we have all five directors present at the moment, and we also have staff present, our Jim Green, our water manager, and Carlos Mendoza, our facilities manager, finance manager, administration manager, Pam Duffield, and general manager, John Weigold, and district council, Jim Carmel, and board secretary, Leah Riedel. So welcome, everybody. Oh, and I also see Chief Fire Chief Hollingsworth here. So all the parties are here and in attendance. In the audience, we presently have 11 people, and I suspect more will be joining us. So welcome, everybody. My president's report today is very brief. Looks like it's going to be an interesting meeting with some interesting topics of discussion. I just wanted to mention one thing. This is regarding some activities out on the Fiscalini Ranch, things that are done by the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, FFRP. I just wanted to let people know, and so this is more for the public and for anyone who might be watching or listening later, that if they wish to volunteer to, say, pull weeds or do other work on the ranch, the best way to do that is to go to the FFRP website, which I'm going to give you in a minute, and which hopefully we can have posted on our own webpage at some point. So that would be www.FiscaliniRanchPreserve.org. So again, www.FiscaliniRanchPreserve.org. So they're always welcoming for volunteers, but that is your best choice so that you can get the appropriate timing and whatever the tasks are. I will say that just because this is kind of short notice for some, is that there is in fact an ice plant pulling party this weekend on Saturday from 10 to 12, and the parties, the pullers, will be meeting at the south end of the Bluff Trail. That's at Windsor over here on Marine Terrace. And they will be meeting at 10 o'clock and then go out to attack the ice plant. So anyone who needs something to do on the Saturday morning, it's a good chance to good socialization too. Moving right along then, I don't have anything more to say except that we do be seeming to have a little bit of a resurgence of COVID in town, so I want to urge people to be a little careful these days because it seems like we're getting another wave is coming through. So we're ready for agenda review. That would be additions and deletions to the agenda. Does anyone have any anything they wish to modify or change the order of events? Anything? Okay, seeing none, let's move right along then to board member communications. So do any of my fellow board members have anything they'd like to say to each other or to the public that's not directly related to our meeting today? All right, then we will move directly to the PROS chairman's report today. So, and I see Mr. Niffen is ready. So Mr. Niffen, welcome.
Good afternoon, thanks for having me. A couple of things just to get quickly through this skate park. The skate park campaign, the small donor campaign, the brick and placement money, probably brought in close to $20,000. They're finishing up that campaign. There's been discussion with the engineer. Ray D'Enzo is working on that with the county, and that's moving along. And so we're satisfied with the progress that they're making there. We always wish it would be quicker, but we understand that it'll be sometime in the fall before we get some finite numbers and decisions. But then the other good news was, is the skate park got a $50,000 donation from an anonymous donor in Paso Robles, who is, I guess, a person that is into active recreation is really all we know about it, but another 50,000. So their number is getting close to $500,000 with the 178 kicked in from the district. So they like the way that's going. The Lions Club has kicked in $10,000 on a match donation. They're looking for a match from some of the other community service organizations in town. We won't mention those organizations right now, but we know that they're out there. So we're kind of plying those people looking for that. Other than that, they're working on the bathrooms, which is a fun project now because we believe that'll help open up possibilities for East Ranch. We got a nice letter in the mail from the Garmins in town that were really, really advocating for the trail around the East Ranch and an activities-based program in the trail system there. So we like that idea, and that kind of morphs me into a magazine that Bob Kelly, Dr. Bob Kelly, who lives in town, is an advocate for parks and has been for years. He's been a statewide representative at many levels, and he sent a magazine, an industry magazine, for us to read. And it's got an article in it about just about evaluating parks and recs and how we put value in certain areas. And we need to be aware that just because we value certain areas, we need to be aware of the areas that we don't necessarily value as much, meaning soccer and baseball are highly valued and we acknowledge their role in our society, but playing frisbee also has an important role and lots of people play frisbee, and we need to make sure that we don't forget the other activities that are going on in forms of active recreation besides just organized sports. It was a fun article to read because it helped, you know, made you think a little deeper. The article is going to be passed around. He asked that I share it with the other board members, and we're going to pass it on to the big board too. Other than that, we had a good meeting, and I'd entertain any questions if you had them.
Thank you, Mr. Niffen. Do we have any questions from the board for Mr. Niffen or commentary? None. I do just have one brief comment. I with great pleasure, watched the PROS meeting. I didn't get to watch it live, but I did watch it on YouTube. And I have to mention the Garmin's letter. I found that to be very exciting. And in fact, I felt that your entire commission seemed to be jazzed by that letter. So if that letter could be published, I think it might be a good idea.
I believe it's been passed along, and I believe it's going to be in the minute. So if the board, you know, even if they wanted to put it on the website, that would be fun, or at least our portion of the website.
Excellent. It contains some very, very good ideas, and the approaches was wonderful, and at low cost, which I particularly like. Director Seidel, I see your hand is up.
Oh, thank you.
You're muted.
I looked down at the wrong square as having been unmuted and see it wasn't myself. Sorry. A question for Mr. Niffen. And you may not know the answer to this, but I'm just curious. The reference of the donation level for Skate Cambria, let's say just round terms, is in the $400,000 to $500,000 range you indicated. Do you happen to know whether they're considering the $187,000 from the district as part of that money?
Yeah, that's in that number.
I'd like to suggest it really needs to not be considered as part of that money because it's not a donation, number one. And number two, it's highly probable those monies will be spent before there's any kind of actual construction that starts prior to the skate park being built. So the idea of those monies being available for the actual construction cost would probably be misleading for the public. And so I caution that perhaps the Skate Cambria should reconsider how they're publishing that number.
Perfect. We'll take that under, I'll pass that along, and I'm sure they'll take it under consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Nichols.
Very good. Thank you. I think it would be appropriate to ask members in the audience if they wish to comment or make some oh, wait, Director Farmer, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, President Howell. So if we subtract the $178,000, by the way, that the district has donated in three-year increments of just under $60,000, I think we need to seriously commend the Skate Cambria folks with regard to the fact that they've raised so far $300,000, and more monies will be coming forward as we have more of a feeling of confidence that the permitting process will be working through as well. So I just wanted to mention that. And this is all volunteer work that's taking place by folks here in the community that really support the kids. They've raised a tremendous amount of money when you get right down to it, and more is on the way.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Let's go to the audience for a minute here. Do folks out there, do you have anything for Mr. Niffen? Let me look here. I see no hands at this point, so I think we can proceed. So thank you very much, Mr. Niffen. Appreciate your report. Looking forward to more exciting things happening with PROS. I think we're really into the beginning of a really good, we're going to have a good season, I think. Thank you. Progressing now to the public comment. This will be general public comment on items that are not on the agenda. And before we commence with that, let me let folks know, since they can't see each other, a little bit about who's here. So right now in the audience, we have 13 folks. And of those who have shown me their first and last names, I'll go ahead and read them out. We have Elizabeth Bettenhausen, Alan Dean, Christine Heinrichs, Crosby and Laura Swartz, Denise Gibbons, Gordon Heinrichs, Joe Pryan, Mackenzie Schumann, Michael Calderwood, Michael Thomas, and Steve Desper. So presently I see Elizabeth Bettenhausen's hand. So Leah, would you please bring her in?
Thank you very much, President Howell. I went down to the beach this morning and had the delight of seeing raucous brown pelicans feeding. And the good news is that they aren't endangered by anything other than the climate crisis wind, which unfortunately will endure. But I also noted that at Shamu Park, the water is flowing into the renovated swimming pool. So it looks like we will have swimming for the local community in a week or so. There is a notice posted on the parks, Slow Parks, that indicates that if you're 17 years old and younger, you will be able to swim for free this summer in the Shamu Park swimming pool. So that's fabulous news for the community. And even though you do deal with water and water connects all over the place. So this is an agenda item potentially for the CCSD. And I'm glad to see Mr. Green there. I haven't seen him in weeks, years actually, and he's looking really good. So I hope that your job appeals to you, Mr. Green. Thank you very much for your public service, sir. And thank you, President Howell.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Do we have any further commentary from the public at this point? Leah, do we have any general public comment that's been written?
None at this time.
Thank you, Leah. And let us move on along. So thank you, everybody. We are now ready for the consent agenda, and we've got two items on here. So I think, first of all, I should invite public comment on these items. So and anybody wish to comment on either of the two items on consent? That's, we've got a budget resolution here to amend the budget, and we have a benefit agreement that needs to be signed for our employees. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands. So let us then go. Oh, yes, Director Farmer. Go ahead.
Thank you, President.
Oops, you're muted. Director Farmer, you're muted.
Sorry, I thought I had unmuted myself. I just want to make a brief observation on item 5A. Down here under discussion, where it says, during fiscal year 2021-22, unanticipated legal expenses were incurred for the Windler litigation. The total legal expenses from July 1st, 2021 to May 26, 2022, totaled $545,341. And then it mentions that we reviewed these unanticipated expenses at our May 19th board meeting. So I just want to mention at our May 19th board meeting, I went to page 154 with regard to reviewing the third quarter budget. And at that point it stated the costs for litigation and trial were unanticipated, and as of March 31st, 2022, have resulted in exceeding budget by $435,500. So since the end of March until this particular amount here, May, not quite 2 months, the amount has increased $110,000 with regard to how much we're needing to pay in legal fees, much more we're needing to pay in legal fees for the Windler case. So I just wanted to point that out to folks. Oh. And we have no idea. The case basically ended in late January with the judge in federal court down in Los Angeles. And we have yet to hear back from her. So we can only hope that it will ultimately be good news when we do hear back. That's my comment. Just an observation on cost.
Okay. Thank you, Director Farmer. Yes, Director Steindl.
Thank you, President Howell. And I just wanted to clarify that referred to as an additional $100,000 plus actually would have taken place from the time frame of July 1st, 2021 through the time frame that was bracketed when we reviewed it at the May 19th meeting. So it's an historic cost that represents a total rather than it being an additive cost that has been additionally incurred. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Steindl. Yeah, I'm assuming that this just invoices keep coming in and, for work that's already been done. And I see Ms. Duffield nodding her head. So it isn't that anything new, but it was just that we haven't had all the bills haven't arrived. Does any director wish to pull any of these items? Seeing none, does the director wish to register a no vote on any of these items?
I need to step away for just a minute.
Okay, I think we can proceed with our business, but please go ahead. We still have a quorum. So thank you, Director Dean. So I'll entertain a motion to adopt the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to? Okay, Director Steindl. Oh, wait.
I move that we adopt the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you, Director Gray. Director Steindl, I'm assuming
it was second. Okay,
thank you. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda, items A and B. Do we have any discussion? Seeing none, let's go for a vote. So let's have the roll call, Leah.
Okay, Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Steindl?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Sorry, President Howell.
That's okay. Either way. Aye.
And Director Farmer?
Aye.
Okay. So thank you, Leah. 4-0. Director Dean is back. Director Dean, would you care to vote on this?
I was listening. Aye.
Okay. Thank you. So, the motion passes 5-0. Thank you, everybody. We're ready to proceed with the hearings and appeals. Now, we have three hearings today, so we'll just start right through them. The first, which is our item 6A, which is a public hearing to discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 33-2022, confirming the 2021 fire hazard fuel reduction itemized cost report of the Cambria Community Services District. So, Jim Weigel, would you please present this, and then we'll open the hearing after you present the item.
Yes, President Howell, we've got the first of three fairly regular annual items here. The first here, item 6A, is a public hearing to discuss and consider adoption of Resolution 33-2022, confirming the 2021 fire hazard fuel reduction itemized cost report of the Cambria Community Services District. Staff recommends that you conduct this public hearing to consider this item, first by opening the public hearing, receiving public comment, closing the hearing, and then consider the resolution for adoption. For any further comments from the staff report, we have the finance manager standing by, as well as the fire chief.
Thank you, Jim Weigel. So before I go to the ask for the public comment, do we have any, do either Ms. Duffield or Chief Hollingsworth have anything to add to the presentation? Okay, seeing none, pardon me. Let's move to the public. So at this point, I'll open the hearing, formally open the public hearing, and take a public comment. So members of the public, would you care to weigh in on this? And we'll give them just a minute. And while we're waiting there, Leah, could you check and see if we have any written comment?
There is no written comment.
Thank you, Leah. And I see no public comment. So one last call for public comment. Seeing none, we'll close the hearing and move to a vote. So may I, I'd entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 33-2022. Anybody want to do that one? Don't be shy.
Okay, here, I'll
come back. Okay, Director Seidel, excuse me.
Thank you, President Howe. Yes, I'd like to make a motion for adoption of Resolution 33-2022, confirming the fire hazard fuel reduction cost report for the CCSD. You're muted, Don. Excuse me, President Howell, you're muted.
Thanks. Vice President Dean, is that a second?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Seconded by Vice President Dean. Moved by Director Steidel, seconded by Vice President Dean to adopt Resolution 33-2022, a resolution confirming the fire hazard fuel reduction program itemized report. So we are ready for the, unless there's further debate on the issue, and seeing none, we're ready for the question. So Leah, would you be so good as to call the roll?
Okay, Director Steidel.
Aye.
Director Steidel, aye. Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye. Director Harmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell, aye. And Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye.
Okay. Motion passes 5-0. So we'll now close the hearing. Oh, no, we already closed the hearing. Then we took the vote. Okay. So we're ready for the next item, 6B. This is a public hearing to discuss and consider adopting Resolution 34-2022, approving a fire suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 5.4% for fiscal year 2022-2023, and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls. So again, Jim Weigel, if you'd be so good as to present this, and then I'll open the hearing.
Yes, thank you, President Howell. As you mentioned, this is item 6B is a public hearing to discuss and consider Resolution 34-2022, approving a fire suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment. Staff recommends that you open a public hearing again, receive public comment, and close the public hearing and consider adoption of this resolution. As outlined in the staff report, though the CPI adjustment's actually above 5.4, our government code precludes anything above 5.4. So that's the maximum we're able to increase it.
I see.
We also have finance manager or administrative department manager Duffield standing by for questions.
Thank you, GM Weigold. Ms. Duffield, do you have anything to add at the moment as we move forward on this? Yes, please.
Just add one little comment. So when we look at the annual CPI every year, we look at two areas. We look at Los Angeles and we look at Riverside as per how this item was adopted back when it was originally adopted. Those are the two areas we look at for CPI evaluation every year. And so the Los Angeles area had a CPI increase from March to March for 8.5%. And Riverside, San Bernardino, Ontario is the three agencies that are together, the three areas that are together, was 10%. So that's how you get your high average that we had. So just information. That was all.
Good to know. Thank you. All right. So let's see. Let us then. Okay. I hereby open the public hearing on this item, which is the adoption of Resolution 34-2022. So members of the public, we're ready for your input, should you choose to. And while we're waiting for a moment, Leah, why don't we go ahead and see if there's any written comment on this one?
There is no written comment.
Thank you, Leah. Okay, one more call to the public before I close the hearing. Anybody? Okay. So everyone is where the public seems to be comfortable with this one. So we will close the hearing at this point and move to any further discussion by the board prior to taking a vote. Yes, Vice President Dean.
I have been asked if when you're looking at the square footage down here of what the charges are based on, is that on the building itself or does that include the land the building is on? So when you're looking at single family residence and you're looking at 3,600 square feet, is that the house itself or the house and the land?
Good question. Ms. Duffield, was that something that you can answer? Pardon me.
Sorry, I couldn't unmute there.
That's all right.
I believe it is the parcel size, but I think I would want the district engineer to confirm that.
Okay. Let's
I believe it's the square footage of the parcel size. I don't believe it's the home. Because remember, this is a parcel.
Parcel tax.
Parcel tax.
True. Yeah.
It's the parcel size.
Okay.
It's
there we go.
Parcel size. Okay.
Thank you. So, definitely the parcel size, which makes sense since we're talking about fire suppression of. So any other questions or comments or anybody wish to debate this? Okay, seeing none, I think we are then ready to take a vote on this one. So again, Leah, would you be so good as to call the roll?
Do we have a motion?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right, Leah, we do need a motion. Anybody want to have the fun of making the motion?
I'll try it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I move that the board adopt Resolution 34-2022, approving a fire suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 5.4% for fiscal year 2022-2023, and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls.
Excellent. And Director Steidel, is that a second?
It is.
Excellent. Thank you. So it has been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 34-2022, approving a fire assessment suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 5.4% for fiscal year 2022-2023, and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls. So now we are ready for the roll call, Leah.
Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Steidel, aye. President Farmer? Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell, aye. And Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye.
Thank you, Leah. So 5-0, the motion passes unanimously. We are now ready for our third public hearing. This will be item 6C, and this is a public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 35-2022, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. So again, GM Weigold, if you'd start with the presentation, and then we'll open to the open the hearing to the public.
Yes, President Howell. Item 6C is a public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 35-2022, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. Staff recommends that you open a public hearing, take public comment, close a public hearing, and then consider the resolution with the board. Admin Department Manager Duffield standing by for any detailed questions on this.
Excellent. Thank you, GM Weigold. Well, do we have any questions for anybody? Okay, seeing none, I do see, nope. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. I'm noticing a list in the back. It seems actually it's a little smaller than last time. There's only four folks here. I just want to make the observation that, and I'm not in any way or shape or form endorsing any kind of friendship here, but I do happen to know Darren Lankford. He's lived in the area for probably over 30 years. And I don't believe, even though he's at this residence here, I don't believe that he's living there. He might even be a homeless person right now. I know his situation is a little bit awkward. So what I'm asking is, would I be out of line perhaps because I frequently see him riding his bicycle around town and he might wave, I'll wave back, something like that. Should I like wave him down and remind him, by the way, Darren, you have this outstanding debt and it's increasing and it isn't going away. You might want to address this. Would I be out of line in approaching him in that regard, or should I just forget about it?
It seems like a nice thing to do for somebody, but I think because of the legalities here, we better ask counsel.
I don't see anything wrong with it.
Okay, very good. So,
from a legal perspective.
Okay, so legally, is there any, and legally there's no reason why you shouldn't do that. Is there a moral thing one way or the other? It seems to me like a nice thing to do, but anyway, I see Director Steidel, she has her hand up.
It's a lovely thing to do, and I think it's a lovely moral thing to do. My concern is that what we're voting on here is to have it added to the tax records. So... in essence, we're taking action that he will not be able to reverse. So you're actually trying to set this aside for notification to someone, basically. And I think we have to pursue it and go ahead. And that what will happen is that it will go on the tax rolls. And if he is homeless, then I would guess just offhand, he is not in a position to pay his taxes either. So I don't know that we're talking about an out-of-pocket expense.
Hmm. Okay. I would presume that if a person were to go ahead and pay, that even rather than wait for the tax bill to come, that then they wouldn't see it on their tax bill. But I think you're right. Oh, I think Ms. Duffield has something to say about this. Yes, Ms. Duffield.
So how this process works with Mission Country Disposal, because they are the collector of these fees, they are unable to put this on the tax roll because they are not authorized to put such a charge on the tax roll. So they come to us as the franchisor, I guess is what it is, franchisor. and we have to put it on the tax roll. So These people on the list here have exhausted every opportunity to make payment to the hauler. So towards the end of May, that was their last day cutoff. So once it's cut off, it goes through this process. So at this point, it is too late for them to come in and make payment at all. They have to, it'll go on their tax bill and it'll have to be addressed in that fashion.
Oh, okay.
They've passed any limits that they have already to be able to come in and pay us or pay the hauler either way.
I see. Thank you, Ms. Duffield. I think that sort of clarifies the issue. I guess the matter of concern in this particular case, if the individual is homeless, he may not be getting the bills. So Director Farmer, it probably would be a good idea to talk to the person just to make sure that they're aware of what's going on here. So, otherwise, because you don't want things to be happening that they people be surprised, especially if they're not in a position to receive the communications. So anybody want to say anything here? All right, folks out there in the audience, do you wish to comment on this? Okay, I see nobody's wishing to speak. And Leah, do we have any written comment on this item?
No written comment.
Oh, okay, thank you, Leah. In that case, I think we are ready. Let's see. I think we need I'm going to close the public hearing now, as though the public hearing is hereby closed, and we're ready for a motion to adopt this resolution. Okay, Director Farmer?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we adopt Resolution 35-2022, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax roll.
Excellent. And a second on that? Seconded by Director Gray. So it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 35-2022, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. If we have no further discussion on this, we will be ready for the roll call.
Okay. Director Farmer.
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Director Gray? Director Gray, aye. I'm sorry. President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell, aye. Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye. And Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Steidel, aye.
Thank you, Leah. The motion passes 5-0. And we are now ready to commence with the regular business. Yes. Okay, so this is sort of the meat of the meeting here. our first item is to discuss and consider the 2022 Annual Water Shortage Assessment Report. So, GM Weigold, would you go ahead and start the ball on this one?
Yes, President Howell. This is the first of the next two items, 7A and 7B, are both water related, but they're in addition to being water related, they're both related to one another here because it's all about our current water situation. The first one here is discussion and consideration of the 2022 Annual Water Shortage Assessment Report. The staff recommends that the board discuss and consider the 2022 Annual Water Assessment Report and approve submission to the Department of Water Resources. And this is a very first report. The state is paying much more attention to water shortage issues across the state. And this first report that we're gonna talk about is one of the issues that they've implemented that'll be required each year. So this is our very first one. The utilities manager, Ray D'Angelo, has a report to give before we progress with discussion. So I recommend his presentation go forward, and then we'll discuss in 7B the governor's executive order separately. So with that, President Howell, I'll pass it back to you. And President Howell, you're on mute still.
Thank you. I think it'd be most productive in this case to commence with the report first from Mr. D'Enzo, and then give the public a chance to ask questions. We may have some back and forth on this. As this item and the next item, I feel it's very important that we all achieve clarity on this. So, Mr. D'Enzo, the floor is yours. And then after you've finished, we'll take questions from the public, and then I'll pass them on to you as we go forward.
Thank you, President Howell. As you can see, I hope that you can see on your screen, I've shared my screen for the presentation. I hope you just give a thumbs up if that's the case. Okay. So a lot of firsts, as General Manager Weigold alluded to, there's a lot of firsts here. This is our first annual water shortage assessment and water shortage and demand assessment. And this is also the first year that we've completed implementation of the new urban water management plan and the new water shortage contingency plan. It had six stages of water shortage indicators. I wanted to commend our staff in generating this report, because we did not get guidance from the state since March of this year. They usually release guidance on how to do the annual water shortage assessment and demand assessment, but we didn't get it till March of this year. So we had to, we knew the data that we needed to collect, but as far as the format of the report and what to report and the criteria of what they're looking for, we didn't receive that till March. And on top of that, there was the governor's declaration of an emergency order for drought. And so, which meant for us, we needed to submit this preliminarily in the end of June. So, which we did. So there was a lot of fine tuning that happened this year. And I hope to introduce that with this presentation. And I hope it helps to answer some of the questions that I'm sure a lot of you in the public have. So first off, I want to go ahead and move to the next slide here. So the annual water shortage and demand assessment serves as a tool to help potential water supply shortages and to implement water shortage response actions to mitigate possible supply gaps. So it's more than just a box that we're checking to fulfill our requirement to the state. It really is a good tool, and it's intended to be a reassessment and iterative process where we look at the data, we present it, we do an analysis, and we report monthly. So just because we submit this, it's not locked in stone that this is how it's going to be for the next year. There's always going to be a reassessment of our current water supply, especially in our situation, because drought conditions are not the same throughout all of California. And it is somewhat frustrating when people outside the area, meaning outside of San Luis Obispo County, and even outside of even our area, like comment on our water supply, when it is a little bit different than how other shortages occur throughout the state. So this is a really good tool for us, and moving forward, we're going to be implementing a lot of these things. So this assessment is informed by current year water conditions, such as the amount of precipitation received during the current year and the start of the dry season. Those are very important. We use this data to complete this water supply and demand assessment, and we make projections for supply and demand during the next year. That's the premise. And the initial projections are then reassessed as actual dry season demands and supply constraints become known. Okay, kind of like what I alluded to. And every month, staff will return to the board with these reassessments and recommend changes to the water shortage response actions or stages, should we be required to move into the different water stages throughout the year. So all of that will always be, we're always going to be vigilant of that. Also, this table This is also in the your packet. It's table one of your report. So the table that we previously had, the water shortage indicators that we used, we're going to be phasing that out in favor of this new state standard supply and demand table. So we're going to be using this table to replace that old table that we had. This new table is posted on the website, and it will be updated monthly for actual gross diversion totals. And the historical data points presented in the old table were primarily supply constraints, and they weren't useful, even though they were useful for staff for making operational decisions. They did not provide accurate holistic picture of the of our water supply at any given point in time. And also the table that we used to present were snapshots in time and were never intended as an auto prescription for shortage stages. So meaning, you know, if Windsor Bridge East was at a stage three and Windsor Bridge West was at a stage two, and then if, like, you know, water levels was one well level was at a stage three, et cetera, et cetera, it didn't automatically mean that that was going to be, you know, whichever indicators were had more of a stage three, that that was automatically what we would be prescribing. They were meant to be tools for staff to use, and like I said, they were mostly they focus a little bit too much more on supply. But in reality, they don't. What we need to do, a holistic approach is to have supply volumes and actual water shortage stages be tied also to the demand that we're also experiencing during these monthly reports. So this is going to be the future of what we will be presenting to you in the future. So in this table, let me explain a little bit more of what this table means, just to clarify some things. So in this table, you see our what's in the top line is called the unconstrained demand for the first row, you know, in the orange cells. So these are, and this is based on averages from the recent years, from 2018 to 2021, and before the stage four declaration was done. So they're not like skewed in any kind of a way. So our analysis assumed similar occupancy rates this year as in the recent past, including the very active full-time vacation rental population. And the unconstrained demand cannot include impacts from mandatory conservation measures, but it can and does include passive conservation from actual replacement of less efficient water fixtures and the local awareness of Cambria's ongoing water insecurity, which, you know, translate that into the good people of Cambria are very aware of our water situation and have taken initiative on their own to curtail their water use. So the anticipated water supply listed in the next row, so this line right here, was derived from actual pumping rates from the July 2015 to June 2016, from that year, 2015 to 2016. This period was chosen in accordance with guidance from the Department of Water Resources, which requires suppliers to plan for a dry year, ahead. And I'll provide more information on that criteria in the next slide. But the next two rows here show the surplus or shortage anticipated without any shortage response actions. So as you can see, there's a projected deficit of about, let me change this pointer, a projected deficit of about 13% for the next year. So that's why this corresponds to a stage two water shortage watch, which I'll talk more in detail in the next item. But you can see below, you can see the benefits from planned shortage response actions. We chose not to include supply augmentation or the WRF due to projections and not calling for anything above a stage three. So meaning we're not, there's no WRF planned operation during this projection. So all of the benefits then are direct, excuse me. Sorry about that. So we chose not to, okay. So all of the benefits then are derived from demand reduction. So assuming we can reach our target conservation using stage one and stage two shortage response actions, we don't anticipate shortage during the reporting period. So actual demand reduction and precipitation received during the next wet season may be more or less severe response action. So what that means is that as we move throughout the year, these conditions could improve or it could worsen. And in that case, we would, again, we would reassess and reevaluate, and we would present the suggestions to you during that time. So as you can see, even just in plain language, that if we don't reduce reduction, so here we see like July, we would need to reduce by 14%. Well, 14% reduction in demand corresponds to a stage two level, because stage two level calls for 20% reduction. So that's essentially what this table shows. So moving on to the next slide. So when performing this assessment, also showed us that the best evaluation criteria is at the start of the dry season and the precipitation data. So also we considered recent and historic demand trends and basic management protocols, such as the percentage of diversion from our primary and secondary supplies. And also the anticipated water supply was derived from actual pumping rates from July 15 to July 16. So staff chose this period due to similarities in received precipitation and dry season length. So in 2022, the dry season began on May 16th, which is this year, compared to in 2015, the dry season started May 17th. So it's very similar to those conditions. And also the precipitation for this current year was also below average, but still slightly higher than 2015. So there's a little bit of a difference there as far as rainfall comparisons go. So basin management protocols will include carefully balancing production from both San Simeon and Santa Rosa aquifers throughout the dry season to avoid drawing either source down to the low levels. So that's why it is important that we do operate the Santa Rosa aquifer to help, you know, curtail any low levels that San Simeon wells experience. So the assessment includes a discussion of these constraints that limit where and how the CCSD can pump. Chief among these constraints is protecting the environment, which is stressed during the drought years, regardless of ag and municipal pumping. So in other words, seeing a dry trend throughout the years, in all the years, is something that we normally will experience, and it shouldn't be necessarily something we should panic about. Okay, but it is something that we expect every year, that there is a dry trend that we need to plan for, and then we can take action if the rains don't recharge the basin. So some of the planned shortage actions that we want to recommend are these. So these are the stage one actions, and some of the stage two actions, and some of them are in stage three. What we do recommend, which is consistent with our code, is we could have deviations of water shortage contingency plan response actions. So meaning, for example, even though it's not a stage three that we're recommending, it's a stage two, we do still recommend increased water waste patrols, for example. So that's something that we will be recommending in the next item when I discuss item 7B. So as far as next steps are concerned, so what we're asking your board today is just to approve this annual water shortage assessment report so that we might submit to the state by July 1st, 2022 deadline. As I mentioned before, the preliminary draft has already been provided to the Department of Water Resources to comply with emergency regulations enacted by the governor's drought-related executive order N.7.22. So submission of this report to the state is not the end of this assessment, because in our next agenda item will be consider implementing staff's recommendation of a stage two water shortage watch. This will initiate an active demand management effort to reduce consumption by 20% during the dry season. And as part of the annual assessment, staff will also reassess water shortage criteria and report monthly on the status of the demand management efforts. So this may involve increasing the severity of shortage response actions or even moving up in stages if conditions warrant. So I guess what I'm saying there, it's not a guess, it is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that once we submit this report, there will continue to be, we will implement it, but we will continue to reassess and bring these reassessed analysis of the data. And if there is any kind of change in recommendation, then you know we would state it at that time. So it tends to be an iterative reassessing process, and but just the submission of this report is the starting point. So that's what we recommend for our board to do today. And with that, that closes this, and I am available for questions.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Let me start with the board first, and then move over to the public. Board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this? I see Director Gray. You're muted. Still muted.
I'm very impressed. Thank you, Reagan. I'm very impressed with the level of analysis, the depth of analysis in this report. I had a question on something that I don't know, might get misinterpreted, or maybe I'm interpreting it wrong. On the supply and demand analysis table, the line on anticipated total water supply, you, as I understand it, you take that from the actual production numbers, I think, with the 2015-2016 year?
Correct, yeah.
Yes. So when people think of supply, and I think of supply, I think, well, this is what's kind of available, which potentially can be pumped. And, of course, you have very low numbers in the wets in the rainy season, like 35 in December, 34 in January, 37 in February. Is this what we're, in fact, constrained to produce, or do we have if there's any sort of rain at all, do we have the ability to pump more in those months?
Oh, okay. So, I'm sorry, President Howell, is it all right for me to answer the question?
All right. Yeah, okay. Please go ahead, Mr. D'Angelo. Okay.
So, I also wanted to state that Melissa Bland, our program manager, and Jim Green is also available for questions as well too. But I'll attempt to answer this question as first. So, by the way, so as you can see, that total water supply projection that's shown there, that, by the way, is a dry year supply. So we didn't pick a normal, that was a normal year. It was a dry year. Which is one of the requirements for this assessment. So we're kind of already assuming that we're not going to have a lot of supply available. But it does mean what, so what your question means, it doesn't mean that we are constrained to pump, you know, that much as shown on that table. But it does mean that, for example, if conditions change, you know, per month, like, cause right now, this is a projection. We're going to report, this is going to change obviously when we start reporting monthly, because mm-hmm. we're going to give you actual numbers of our demand and actual numbers of our supply that we pumped that year or that month. And we would reassess, and part of that would be reassessing, you know, does this warrant moving out of a stage two, or does this warrant moving into a stage three? So we will reassess at that time, but we are not, you know, to answer your question, we are not tied to the numbers that are shown here. This is a projection, but it's based on a projection of a dry year.
Okay, thank you, Mr. D'Anzo. Any other board commentary questions as we go forward? Okay, let's move over to the, hang on a second there. Yes, I see members of the public now. So we start with Elizabeth Bettenhausen, please. And that will be followed by Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Thank you very much, President Howell. I looked this morning at the demand projections in these two items in your agenda, and I certainly find they make numerical sense. The demand includes every month the 5 acre feet of lost water every month, and that's projected to continue with no improvement on the water loss issue. And so certainly the demand numbers make sense as they're laid out in Table 1. And in July, August, then the demand is projected at 104 acre feet. On the other hand, projection of water supply for July, August 2022, is lower than the actual production numbers that have been factored in from the past, the actual numbers, not projected now. And I commend this approach because it says that demand is greater than supply. And one good reason to project demand is higher than supply is to highlight the need to reduce the amount of water that CCSD withdraws from the two creeks. That would address the longstanding point that the Coastal Commission has been making over the CCSD withdrawing water and damaging the creek's riparian habitat. Another good reason to project this way, to project demand higher than supply, is that it can draw attention in the community, if you project state it that way, to the increasing degree and length of the drought in the climate crisis that grows daily. All the news about the climate crisis these days is bad news, and it comes almost daily with new items. Since the demand is 14 acre feet greater than projected supply for the first 2 months in this projection, July and August, some questions arise. Number one, how does the CCSD allocate among the categories of customers the components of conservation aspiring to 20%, but reduction settling for 12%. How do you allocate that among the categories of customers? Are residential, commercial, vacation rental, internal, and riparian customers expected to reduce by the same percentage? There's no discussion of that. Number two, what are the enforcement measures that the CCSD uses to ensure that commercial users are abiding by the stated stipulations in stages 1 and 2. There's no indication of that. Question number three, how does the CCSD allocate the percentage of reduced usage expected among each category of customer? For example, are the commercial car wash, the commercial laundry, and every restaurant called to reduce their usage by the same amount? Or is there a differentiation for the different kinds of customers? Another example would be, what does the CCSD expect of the residential customers who use 1 to 4 units bimonthly? Are we expected to reduce the same percent by the same percentage as those who use 10 units bimonthly? Number four, I'm sending this to you. I've sent it to you in written form, and I ask that it be included in the agenda, in the minutes of this meeting. So I want to clarify I won't read the remaining, you can read it yourselves later or in your email right now, But I want to say that I was very confused by pages 67 and 68. And although Mr. D'Enzo has certainly given an excellent explanation, it's still confusing to me. And I don't think I'm an inordinately stupid or ignorant member of the public. So if I don't get it, I suspect there are one or two others who don't get it either. What in the world will you use as the criteria to determine the stages 1 through 6 for the upcoming years? What data do you, the directors, expect to be provided to you in these coming months, as this material is always updated every month? What criteria and data do you want to see before you regarding supply for the San Simeon Creek Aquifer and the Santa Rosa Creek Aquifer? Distinguish between those two. It's very unclear to me how much water is the actual supply. It's been unclear to me since 2002 when I moved here, and I've been trying to understand it ever since, and I still do not know. How do you know what the actual supply of water is for this community? And that's talking about half gallons, like my milk container. That's not talking about speculation amounts or volume unspecified. So I thank you very much for attending to this. It's fascinating to me how bureaucracies of government can lay a bunch of work on each other. And certainly that happens here when the state lays it on poor little Cambria, which almost wouldn't have to do it. If we keep losing population, we won't have to do it too much anymore, though. You could look at it that way, I suppose. So I thank you very much for your attention to this. And I thank the staff for explaining this to the best of their ability. And when it's incomprehensible universally, don't worry about it, because then it's not your fault.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Before we go on to Crosby and Laura Swartz, Mr. D'Enzo, are any of those questions things that you feel you can answer at this point?
So I want to answer simply to the important question I thought that Dr. Bettenhausen said is, how do we move into the different stages? And so the premise really here is that we want to make everything action oriented. So meaning that we don't look at an objective set of criteria and then say that'll be the stage or this will be the stage, but the intent is for what actions can we do to what actions do we need, actually, that's even better said, what actions do we need to meet the shortfall in our projections. And I do want to say, though, that all the criteria that we've used in the past doesn't go away. What I'm saying here is that we will still use the same criteria. We'll use well levels. We'll use the gradient. We'll use rainfall. All of those basic things that we've used in the past. But what we're saying here is that we have a more holistic approach, where there is a comparison with demand and how the community is responding to the demand. So yes, it's I think I agree with all of those things as far as, how can we reach out to the community to enforce some of these things. We do want to recommend, more water patrol availability to be able to enforce some of these conditions that were, or these demand conditions that we're not imposing, but we're recommending. So yes, all of those things I agree with, and I definitely want to see improvement on all of that. But as far as going to the different stages, it's important to note that we want to be action oriented, and we want to base it on those things.
Thank you, Mr. D'Enzo. Okay, Crosby and Laura Swartz. And I know that there is written comment here, but I presume you would like to read it, or maybe you have something else to say as well. So please go ahead.
Thank you, President Howell and members of the board. This is Crosby. I did submit written comments that I'd like included in the record for this meeting, but I'll review them quickly. We have reviewed the draft annual water shortage assessment report, and we have the following comments. Number one, the draft report does not use current water supply information in Table 3 and Table 5. demand numbers from years past do not accurately represent current available acre feet stored in the aquifers. Number two, we recommend using total available water supply volumes in acre feet based on current date well level readings. Tables 3 and 5 should reflect that during the dry season, the remaining available water supply drops off each month as water is pumped out to meet customer demands. Number three, if the remaining available water in the aquifer on a specific date is less than the remaining demand projected to the end of the dry season and well recharge date, then water conservation and demand reduction is required. Number four, the total remaining dry season demand after conservation must be less than the remaining usable acre feet in the aquifer to avoid aquifer overdraft conditions, saltwater intrusion, and environmental damage. Next, the acre feet of water in the aquifer at any given well level is determined by adding together pumping volumes for each well level change. Thank you for listening to my comments. That's
it. Thank you, Mr. Swartz. We're going to do more back and forth here than we would normally do. So, Mr. D'Enzo, is there anything you'd like to respond to on that?
Yes, I would like our program manager, Melissa Bland, to help answer this question.
Thank you. So, Ms. Bland, you have the floor.
Thank you. On the one hand, we will be doing exactly that. We will be looking on a monthly basis to see, using the projections that we have included in this table, what we expected to see as far as our demands go, and what remaining supply we believe is available. And then this addresses a little bit of also what Ms. Bettenhausen brought up. There is no clear way to say at the beginning of a dry season, we have 732.9 acre feet available. We can't come up with a number like that. We have models that provide, essentially really smart projections, but that's all we have. So we used the data described in this report, primarily the start of the dry season, which really indicates the beginning of the depletion of the aquifer and how long you have to rely on that limited supply. And then the amount of precipitation that preceded this reporting period starting July 1st of this year. So we will be using those models to help communicate what we think the supply is, but we're not taking like the Kennedy-Jenks 2000 model and using that on a monthly basis to give you what we think is truly available. This is a very conservative projection based off of a rather historic dry period. I think that there is more supply than what is listed here, but being overly cautious and asking for this reduction is going to provide a buffer that we may end up needing if we continue to see trends of late, sporadic, insufficient rainfall.
Thank you, Ms. Bland. So, Mr. D'Enzo, are we pretty much dealt with those concerns then?
Yes, yeah. And I think we'll reinforce it also in the next item too.
Oh, okay, great. All right, I see Scott Anderson. Please come in and talk to us.
Thanks, Director Howell. I'm a little late to the party. I thought this item would be discussed right before it appears on the agenda. So I have not heard the preceding comments from Elizabeth or others. So forgive me if I repeat myself or I repeat them. First, Director Howell, let me remind you, as I reminded you last meeting, about coming up with those costs for the WRF. That Harry, Director Farmer, has done, and I think he's waiting for you before we get a final number. And I think there are many people in the community just would like to know what that number is. It would give them confidence that management and directors are on top of it and understand where the money is going, which is just a good feeling. I just have two comments about the water thing in general. And I know, I think you all appreciate this, that the folks that call, kind of the watch group that pays attention to this stuff and spends hundreds of hours over the course of a year trying to understand what's going on with water in the community. I've seen some defenses lately that of the CCSD that wanted to kind of belittle these people. And I just wanted to encourage everyone to appreciate the amount of work, thought, and effort that goes into the comments that come to you folks, these questions. I don't think they're mean-spirited in any way. It's truly a desire to understand. So here are two examples of things I'm trying to understand. One is, I'm looking at the well level trends, and I think you've probably talked about this already at some length, but I see the trend this year, and I'm looking at only three dates, 2013, 2015, and 2022. And the trend line for 2022 is almost identical to the trend line of 2013, which was the lowest on record that I have access to for the last 10 years or so. So, I'm wondering why we're not proceeding with more haste. When Mr. D'Enzo gives explanations, I find it very difficult to understand really what the bottom line is. So if someone could just say what the bottom line, why a trend line that is identical to the worst year we've ever had is not instilling a little more dread about what might be facing us and anticipatory actions to, fire up the very thing that was put in place after this record low year and has been being paid for the last 8 years, but hasn't been fired up. So if there's really simple ways of explaining that, I'd sure appreciate it. And then somebody after all these years would know how much water is left in the aquifer, kind of what Crosby was saying. It just seems like knowing how much water is in there at any time is important. And using 10 or 12 different measures to try and figure out kind of the crystal ball approach to all this stuff, I just don't understand, as many others in the community don't understand. So if there were a simple way of explaining why we're deferring and specifically when we're going to consider turning on the WRF right now, soon, just what will it take to do that? And I know there's all kinds of variables out there, but we're in the guessing. This is a guessing game, science art thing anyway. And lastly, I think I now understand that commercial is using about 40% of Cambria's total water. So I'm curious about how the commercial segment of our community is being sensitized and asked to contribute to conservation. Perfect. I'm done.
Good timing there. A number of questions there. So again, Mr. D'Enzo, if you would be so good, if you'd care to answer any of these now, or if you feel it's appropriate. Now remember, all you folks with questions, you can always approach Mr. D'Enzo and get answers to these in a one-on-one. Pardon me for volunteering your time, Mr. D'Enzo, but. There are other forums which you can use in order to achieve some kind of understanding of these issues. But anyway, so yes, Mr. D'Enzo, is there anything that you'd care to respond to at this point?
So a lot of these will, I hope some of these will be clarified in the next presentation, but Melissa Bland, program manager, also wants to answer some of these.
Excellent. Well, let's start with Melissa. Oh, there you are. Yes, Melissa, you have the floor.
Hello again. I'm going to start with how we're going to focus the conservation programming. And that is staff's responsibility to target our efforts where the most water reduction can be achieved. So commercial is the kind of low-hanging fruit when it comes to conserving water. Our residents are already so efficient that targeting them is not going to be very effective for us. That's not where we're going to find our 20%. So staff does have a lot of plans in place. We've already prepared materials that we will be providing to commercial properties. We will be making public appearances in businesses and restaurants, commercial lodging, targeting vacation rentals. We will discuss that in the next item. I also want to really quickly, if I can, share my screen and show you. Let's see. So this is going to look slightly different to what from what you're used to seeing. Are you seeing the San Simeon Creek well levels?
Oh, here we are. Yes.
So Megan in our department has put together an interactive version of our San Simeon Creek well level chart. So what you're seeing here is the data for the years selected up here in black, 2022, 2021, 2014, and 2013. So while we have started this current water year here in blue, below honestly any historical metric that we've been tracking since 1988, the thing that does make us on an operational standpoint feel a little bit more comfortable is the fact that the decline is mirroring last year. This line here in red is 2021. So we're seeing the pretty much almost the same dip in storage as 2021. So that's comforting to know, because we are not seeing what happened in 2013, which is this very severe dive, this nosedive of supply. And that is part of the reason why we did not choose to use the 2014 dry year as our model for the projections in this assessment, because you had very different levels of aquifer recharge that preceded that dry period. So I just wanted to point out that we are looking at these well levels. We're not ignoring them. It's something that we look at on a, you know, almost daily basis. And if Mr. Green is still on, he can speak to that. But these are things we mean when we say operational constraints. This is just our San Simeon Creek wells. So we can slow the decline by relieving these wells when we operate our Santa Rosa wells during the dry season. You know, other metrics aren't as easy to manipulate, but this is one that we do have some control over. So I hope that's a little helpful.
Thank you, Ms. Glenn. That's very interesting, in fact. Mr. Green, would you have anything to add to this? I'm not sure that he's
Sorry, I took a minute to unmute there. No, this is something that we are viewing daily through our rounds. When we look at production sites, we've been kind of slowly bringing our Santa Rosa wells back online here. So look forward to seeing production from them next month. You'll see that our San Simeon well levels were a little well or below average. Mind you that we haven't run the San Simeons for a drop out of them since our transmission line well failure that went into January. So that's why I think the well levels are up in Santa Rosa and lower in San Simeon. So I think you'll kind of see that even out over the next couple of months as we draw more production and diversion from the Santa Rosas.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Mr. Green. Let me see. I think I don't see anybody else out there. I'll just make one comment and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. D'Enzo, but just to respond to the question as to why we do not turn on the WRF right now. My understanding is that according to our current permit, we would not be permitted to turn it on unless we were in a stage 5 or 6. Is that a correct understanding?
That's correct.
Okay, so in response to Mr. Scott's question, we're not either we would have to artificially claim that we had way less than we had, or else things would have to be a lot worse than they presently are before we could legally turn the plant on. However, it is my understanding that we do maintain the plant in readiness so that when it is needed, we will be able to do it without delay. I think we are, let me see, what do we have to do here? Okay, I think we need to adopt this report and recommend, let's see, how does this work? Yes, we need to approve submission to the Department of Water Resources. So I think I would like to do that, but I would also like, if I may, no, let's do this first, but then before I leave this item, I have a subsequent motion to make regarding this. But let's do this one first. Director Farmer, and then Director Steidel.
Yeah, well, personally, I wanted to hear comments from the community before there was further board discussion on this particular item. course, this one and item 7B, they kind of dovetail together. So I'm just curious. I'd like to make some comments on what's been discussed so far, if I can do that.
Oh, yes, that's definitely in order. Although I would prefer to have a motion before we go. Let's get a motion on the floor. And then if you can hold that thought, Mr. Director Farmer, until we get the motion, and then you can we can do it in the context of debate on the motion. So does someone want to, let's have a motion to, okay, Director Gray?
Yeah, I move that we submit the 2022 Annual Water Shortage Assessment Report to the state. Okay. Simple way of putting it.
Good, I like simple motions. Okay, it's been moved. I guess Director Steidel, is that a second?
Yes, okay. It is.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the board approve submission of the 2022 Annual Water Shortage Assessment Report, approve the submission to the Department of Water Resources. So now we're open for debate, and we'll start with Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. First, I do want to thank Mr. D'Anzo and his staff for putting this report together. It appears as if we're trying to move forward in a more, how could I say it, in a more productive fashion with regard to addressing the water needs of the community. I want to make a comment with regard to using the terms of the wet and dry season. And I'm going to compare that to, we used to have a fire season and then a time when we didn't have a fire season. But now I think it's pretty much accepted by both Cal Fire and everyone that lives in this state that the fire season is year round. And I'd like to draw the comparison to the wet and dry season with regard to rain, and that Ms. Bland, I wrote down what she said with regard to late sporadic insufficient rainfall. And that pretty much describes what we've had. And I'd say that we basically live in a dry season all year round with occasional rainfall. I just want to use as an example, if nobody minds, and I know that this has kind of been broken down with regard to calendar years, but I'd like to use the season that begins from July 1st to June 30th. So first I'd like to, if we don't mind, this is from year 20 to 2021. Okay, so starting in November of 2020, it rained basically two times for 0.8 of an inch of rain. So twice out of the entire month. It rained 4 pounds in December for just over 1.5 inches. So far we have about 2.5 inches of rain in November and December. In January, it rained basically 0.4 of an inch of rain until we had that deluge. I'm sure we all remember that atmospheric river that was roughly 14.5 inches of rain. 13.5, excuse me. And then it rained once in February and we had about 0.3 of an inch. And then it rained a couple of times in March and we had a little under 2 inches. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that with including the deluge, the atmospheric river, we had just under 19 inches of rain. But if you exclude that atmospheric river that lasted 53 hours, okay, this is 53 hours out of 365 days a year. Other than that, we had less than 5 inches of rain. So that's what happened in the previous season. So far this year, we had this particular season. In October of 2021, it rained once, got about 2 inches of rain. It was a really good overnight soaker. It was really, wow, this is awesome. When you get, usually that first rain is about, let's say, 1/4 inch. It's nice to get it. But it was a little over 2 inches. Boy, it was such a good feeling. And then it rained once early in November, about 0.5 inch of rain, overnight drizzle, light rain. And then it rained a little bit early December. And then basically from the middle to the end of December, we got over 12 inches of rain. So once again, this very limited period of time where we got a whole bunch of rain. And of course, I think we all know that so far this year, we didn't get any rain until the end of March, whereas on the 27th, the 28th, we got 2.25 inches of rain. So if you remove December from what we received overall, it's been very insufficient, about 5 inches of rain. So what I'm saying is that we can't be depending on much of anything with regard to rainfall at all. And, you know, Ray said that, and I understand why he's saying this, you know, this shouldn't be something we should panic about. You know, my concern here is the opportunity to have satisfactory rainfall is history. And the fact that in the table that Ray presented, demand is higher than supply. I hesitate to use any kind of financial terms here, but so let's say that as you're moving through a particular year, each month you're spending more money than you have coming in. How long can you do that? Well, how long can you have demand exceeding supply? And it appears that that's going to be on the horizon here for quite a while. All I'm saying is that we're in pretty challenging shape right now in this community. And I don't think it should be dismissed in any way, shape, or form, especially moving forward. This has been the driest first 3 months of the year. I think that this has been stated in the known history of water supply in the state of California. And while I don't necessarily want to use the panic word panic, as Ray said, we shouldn't be panicking. This is serious cause for alarm. And I think I'll address this a little bit further when we get to item 7B. But I just want to point out that even though the rainfall totals don't appear all that bad, usually when I first moved here, most of the time I've been here, the average is about 24 inches of rain. So the last couple of seasons, we're getting like 18 to 19. But it's all basically coming in one very short spurt. And I think I've kind of, I'm sure I have more than I want to say, I'll just leave it at that for right now. And I'll say more in the 7B. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you, President Howell. I believe this report is accurate and extremely comprehensive, as I said. The one thing that I would like to see, and this isn't a part of the motion or anything like that, but maybe as we go forward, given the questions that were asked and then in some of the comments, and my own question, that I do think these reports, which are, of course, essentially compliance documents, it's something that's required by the state. So there's a certain report, certain format has to be followed, certain details to be given, are the source of, you know, very valuable information. But I think for most of the public, it's it needs some something like an executive summary, or it needs some kind of presentation, which is much more compressed, clear as to what the actual situation is, because I do think, and I'm not panicking, and I think it, you know, the picture from my perspective is actually pretty good considering what most of the state's going through. But certain things do have to be explained a little bit more. Like, for instance, the reason that, and Mr. Green said this finally, you know, after in response to a question, the reason that San Simeon Creek wells are so low is that we haven't been pumping out of Santa Rosa Creek as we normally do to a certain amount. There's a dynamic between the two of them. The levels, you know, the levels compared to historical norms are, as you say, kind of on the track with last year. And people are conserving also more. We're actually running below unconstrained demand if you look at the numbers a little bit. So certain things are reassuring, but there's a general, it's a very technical document. And it's extremely valuable information. And I think that as we go forward, when these things are sent to the state, I think something has to be put out also to the public, especially this week when there is a news story, as we all know now from San Francisco, which makes it look like we're basically about to dry up. And there's a number of things that need to be corrected in that. Again, public information here, I think, is a crucial need. And an excellent report. I think we should send it as it is. I do also think we need to present it in a form that's a little more accessible.
Thank you, Director Gray. Further debate from the board? Okay, seeing none, we've already had public. Oh, yes, Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. I'd like to ask Ms. Bland if she could put up what she put up, I think it was between 5 and 10 minutes ago, with regard to the well levels. If she wouldn't mind putting that back up, the 4 years.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it back up. I closed that web browser. Okay. One second.
Thank you.
Yeah. You may get to observe how slow my internet is for a moment.
So if I could just, before it comes up here, keep in mind here that what we're doing is comparing, I believe, 4 really serious drought years that were lacking in rainfall. That's not the one that I want. It's the one that you showed earlier.
I'm tabbing over to it. Just one second.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I see. You take out some of the other ones.
There we go.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Oh, nice.
So, what we have here are 4 of the, 3 of the problematic full years, and then the one that we're in now. And the red line, if I'm not mistaken, was last year.
Yes.
And so the fact that we should feel comfortable, that I think that comment was made, that we should feel comfortable that we're pretty much trending now with regard to last year, when in fact we're actually below it. It may not be below that, but I seem to recall in August of last year, we wound up declaring a stage 4 water emergency. And personally, I would be anticipating the same thing happening this year. And I just talked about the water, you know, the rainfall figures that we've had. And we've only had like a little over 2 inches of rain since January. And I think we should be anticipating declaring a higher stage than stage 2 very shortly, and perhaps be anticipating, and I hesitate to say this, but we have spent almost $15 million on this facility, that we might be anticipating operating that pretty soon. And since it takes 60 days to get it up to speed, we probably need to be thinking about that. But anyway, the main reason I'm bringing this up is because, while no, right now it doesn't look as bad as 2013, I feel there is cause for alarm. And I don't think, and we should not be dismissing the circumstances that we, this community, is in right now. And I'll say a little more about it in 7B. But, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Director Farmer. Any additional discussion on this motion? Let's try to focus just on the motion here. Director Steidel.
The only caveat I'd put out to the discussion that's been going on is this is a focus specifically to the San Simeon wells. And we historically, during dry periods, access Santa Rosa. And the reason we access Santa Rosa is to give San Simeon a rest. Mm-hmm. And it's been historically our experience that when we give San Simeon a rest, it recovers. It's because of the continuous draw that we're making on San Simeon. So I'm not saying that that's the resolution. I'm not saying that We shouldn't be concerned. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be paying attention to what's going on, but the only qualifier that I will put out there is that this is a specific focus to San Simeon, and we have several alternatives to help relieve that current position.
Good point. Thank you, Director Steidel. Further discussion on the motion? Okay, now remember, this is just a motion to submit this to this document to the state per the requirements. So seeing no further debate, we are ready for the question, Leah. So would you be so good as to call the roll?
Sure. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Considering all the work that's been put into it, I'll reluctantly say aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean?
Aye.
And President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes 5-0. Thank you, everybody. Before we move to the next item, I would like to propose another motion. I would like to have that, even though that this is now ready for, we've wrapped it up, tied a bow on it, and it's ready to go to the state. I still think, because we were, there was a time constraint on this, and so that it couldn't be prepared soon enough to go through the, go to the R&I committee, I would very much like to have this, forgive me, Mr. D'Anzo, it's a little extra work. It has nothing to do with the quality of the report, but rather I would like to have more opportunity to hear the discussion on this and to have a little more chance for the public to hear some of the explanations. And we have some really smart people on the R&I committee who can also ask penetrating questions. So, and it might be well as a first step towards what Director Gray is suggesting, which is formulating some kind of public information or some format or some kind of information that will help to clarify these issues for the public. So I move that Mr. D'Anzo present this to the R&I committee at its next meeting just for that purpose. Director, Vice President Dean.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that Director, that Mr. D'Anzo be asked to present this this material to the R&I committee at its next meeting. Now, remember, this has nothing to do with submitting it. We're not asking for a change. It's just another chance to talk about this and to hear the questions. Because, I do find it incredibly useful and often. So, Director Gray.
A question about that. First of all, when is the next R&I meeting?
Vice President Dean, do you have the answer to that?
We canceled the meeting in July because we had one member that's going to be absent. But I think we could go ahead and have it in July, even though there's one absent.
Okay.
We'll have to call it as a, I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice. We'll have to call it as a special meeting.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm asking that scheduling question is, I mean, Mr. D'Anzo was mentioning that they were going to be doing a monthly update of this report, as I understand, not the full report, but there will be as I understand it, maybe Mr. D'Anzo, you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're going to come back every month with a update of our situation, essentially, following up on this, right? So maybe the process should be that could go to the R&I, then to us in future months. Because it seems like we're dealing with the same basic data with updates.
Oh, yeah, if I may. Yeah, I do agree that as we move forward and as staff reviews this and then comes back, it was always nice if we can get it to the R&I folks first.
Right.
Just because then it gives us a chance to be more educated. But in this particular case, we're not wanting to change anything. The job is excellent. And I hesitate asking you to do a little more work. But I do think it would be worth it just to get this one more time in front of the public, just so that people have a more chance to ask additional questions or hear the same thing answered again. I think that would be a good idea. We are now ready. Any further debate on this? I do see a member of the public. This isn't really quite appropriate because we're finished with this item, but Mr. Calderwood, I'd go ahead and let you speak.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Just a point of order. It seems that you're assigning work to a staff member, and I don't know that it's appropriate for the board to do. Should this not go through the general manager to assess the request and then assign the assignment? Thank you.
Thank you for that. Well, appropriately, yes, we could change the motion to direct the general manager to have the report presented to the R&I committee at its next meeting. I would be willing to change that wording. Thank you, Mr. Calderwood. All right. Any other debate?
Well,
okay. I think we're ready for.
I am sensitive to staff time too.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
It's a fair question about whether this needs to be done for a report we have already sent to the state, as opposed to say subsequent reports. I'm not sure this report he has to be. You know, Mr. D'Enzo has to redo his presentation of it. Because, I mean, I think a subsequent report is going to be coming very soon.
I see okay, we're getting some more discussion. I think Mr. D'Enzo had his hand up, and then Director Steidel.
So, yeah, for clarity's sake, so next year, since we have the guidelines, you know, we intended to go through the R&I committee for... We were under a time constraint because the guidelines didn't come in since March. So now that we have a better handle on what the criteria for the report is, we were, and I mentioned it in the staff report, we would present it to the R&I next year. But what you're asking here is the public facing portion of the report, we would get guidance from the R&I committee for that. Is that what I'm...
Let me respond before I call on Director Steidel. No, just to present just what you've just presented to us. It's not to be approved, but to be communicated. It's the only purpose would be so that the R&I committee can hear the report, satisfy themselves that they understand it. My point here is that this... We're getting to an area where it's difficult for people to grasp, but I think the more people that actually understand how this works, I think will alleviate some of the discomfort that many are having, the sense of insecurity, or the feeling that they don't really, that's the sense that I'm getting just based even on the questions that came up today. So this isn't a matter of redoing anything. What we're asking is like an hour or two of Mr. D'Enzo's time just to present this to the R&I committee and answer questions from the committee and the public at that time, but not in any way changing anything that was written. So it's not for approval. it's strictly, the only reason I said though, Director Gray, is that it might, that meeting, when one watches, these are incredibly useful meetings to watch, that it might help for us as directors to come up after we can see how these presentations work. It may focus us in areas where we see that we need better public information. And so it's really more for our purpose. The report is excellent and needs no change. And that wasn't what Vice President Dean and I were asking. It's just to be presented so that it can be talked about and understood. Because it's not real necessarily intuitively obvious, everything in there. Okay, now who's next here? Director Farmer?
Thank you, President Hill. I'm sure that Vice President Dean, being the chair of R&I, would have come up with the suggestion that I'm about to make, but I'm just going to make it anyway. I might suggest that every member, and there's some really bright people on the R&I committee, volunteering their time, that every member of that committee be encouraged to watch what we just discussed in item 7A before they have their special meeting where Mr. D'Enzo is going to appear. So they are already really up to speed on what's being discussed, what points are being made, what areas of importance need to be addressed, and so forth.
Thank you, Director Farmer. It sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Director Steidel.
I applaud what you're trying to do, President Howe, in terms of, providing opportunities for information gathering by the community. And you're right, it is a complex issue. The practicality is that there aren't that many people that show up to R&I committee meetings or to finance committee meetings. Maybe it would be different in terms of this topic, but by the same token, there was a great deal of effort that went into the information that was presented today, and there was very detailed information and explanations that Mr. D'Anzo and Ms. Bland made. And that's available to anyone at any time, and they can rewatch this meeting 4 times if they want to be able to try to understand the information that's being provided. So I would be inclined to want to have Mr. D'Anzo and Ms. Bland's time go to this the initial report, the first month's report and comparison data, and have that reviewed by R&I, which would happen next month anyway.
Yeah. So
okay. Thank you.
So I don't know why we're exercising people to death, because we're not going to educate 60% of the population of the community by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Director Steidel. Director Gray.
Yeah, Director Steidel just made my point better than I did. I think the idea that we're kind of redoing something that is now on tape, on record, available to see. And I do, from my experience at the standing committees, I don't think the audience for the standing committees is much different, and certainly not much larger than the attendee list for our group here. I go back to my thought that we need to produce something through various venues, website, social media, that summarizes these reports and is attached to the report itself, maybe, that a very large audience can see that doesn't come to these meetings. I do think also that the updates should go to the R&I committee. The monthly update should take a stop at the R&I committee for airing. And I think that would basically do a lot for public information right there. And it wouldn't be repeating work that's already been done.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Okay, thank you for all that discussion. You gave me some good ideas. Okay, well, I think we're ready for the question at this point. So the motion has been to instruct the general manager to ask Mr. D'Anzo to present this same report to the R&I committee at the next possible meeting. I think we're ready for the roll call.
Okay, President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell? Aye. Vice President Dean?
Aye, but then I'm going to make another motion amending this motion if I can.
Well, why don't we do that first then?
You do that first.
Okay. The roll call. Okay.
I agree with both what Director Gray and Director Steidel said, that why don't we bring the updates to this before R&I, before they're presented to the board, rather than have a Mr. D'Anzo go through this entire thing again. So I make, I see Director Gray has his hand up. Maybe he wants to.
I'm about to second your motion. Go ahead.
Second there. Go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't quite.
I second the motion the amendment. I second the amendment.
Okay. I'm not 100%. We need the wording though. So Director Dean, could you try? Forgive me for your voice is challenged here. Well, do you want Director Gray to announce the amendment? Because he seemed to agree. Let's save your voice. So Director Gray, would you be so kind as to.
I second Vice President Dean's amendment to direct the general manager to have staff present the subsequent monthly updates of the water, I think water shortage assessment, and I don't know the exact language, at Resources and Infrastructure Committee meetings.
Okay. I will take that as a, I'll go ahead and accept that amendment. So I don't think we'll need to vote on it as long as, because the second was Director Dean. Now I see, first of all, let me get GM Weigel in here and then Director Steidel, then back to Director Dean. GM Weigel.
Thanks, President Howell. I just want to clarify, there is no monthly update on this assessment. It's an annual assessment every year. So there's no monthly updates for this coming.
Hmm. I guess my question now is, what is, something is done on a monthly basis, though. There is a, Mr. D'Enzo and Ms. Bland were talking about it, a monthly update, not of this report, but of the water shortage situation. Maybe I can get a response on that.
Yeah, okay. Mr. D'Enzo, maybe you could explain. Yeah.
So yes, it's true. The assessment is a yearly thing that is annual. So, but what I did talk about in the report is that all that data, we update that monthly, very similarly to how I present the well levels in the utilities report. But this is going to be a little bit more involved, where we're going to compare supply, you know, we had a projected supply, but what is our actual supply for this month? And then the demand associated with that. That's the update that needs to happen every month.
Hmm. Okay. So I think that, and that is the update that we are referring to in okay, I think let's go to Director Steidel, and then Leah, I'm going to ask you to reread the motion to us because the wording is kind of important on this one. So yeah, Director Steidel.
I'll wait to hear what the motion is.
Okay, so as I understand it, because I have a little bit of confusion over it myself, but as I understand it, Vice President Dean has moved to direct General Manager Weigold to have staff present the subsequent monthly updates of the Water Shortage Assessment Report monthly at the R&I subcommittee meetings. And I have that Director Gray seconded that motion. Is that correct?
Yes. So does that adequately, let me go to Mr. D'Enzo first. Does that adequately describe to you what it is we're asking, Mr. D'Enzo?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Okay, I'm going to go with that, I think. GM Weigel.
Yeah, so I got to push back again on this a little bit because this is an operational issue. I understand that the board wants to understand more on this, and I'd suggest we incorporate this into the monthly utility report because we do an awful lot of regulatory reporting, and to me this is an added burden on the staff with all the other projects we've got going. But if you could clarify what you're trying to learn from the information, that might be more helpful than creating another report for the board each month. And I don't understand what you're trying to get at.
I see. Interesting. Let me see, Director Gray. This actually, let me take Director Steidel first here.
I have a suggestion. This is getting way too convoluted, and it's just taken up extraordinary amount of time with absolutely no value. I would suggest that what we do is withdraw the motion from the table, both of them, that we can have people do is take a look at this recording if they, you know, want to be able to review the information again. And I would suggest that that Director Dean or Vice President Dean and Mr. D'Enzo and Mr. Weigold have a conversation and decide if there is a reporting feature of value that they would like to have that would come to the R&I on a monthly basis, or if by chance it's something that would be an expanded portion of the utility report. And that conversation can happen offline, and we can take it out of trying to resolve that here.
Okay, well, you do make a good point. Let's see.
Do we need is that a motion that needs a second? Because I think it's, I think we're all tied up in knots anyway, too. I think I agree. I think we could.
Yeah, we're getting further away from what I was after as well. Yeah, if I yes, Director Dean, Vice President Dean.
Okay, so I withdraw my motion and go ahead and agree with what both Director Steidel and Director Gray said.
Okay.
Sorry.
That brings the original motion back, and I'm going to go ahead and withdraw that, not because I still am not changing my position on this, but I do feel that based upon what I'm hearing and seeing from the rest of you, I don't think I'm going to get agreement. But my final say on this is I let it get a little too far away from what it was that I really wanted, which was simply a detailed, thorough, detailed analysis and discussion of this particular methodology, why it's used, how it's used, and the justifications for it, so that everyone can understand what the issues are, but we can let that go. If that's something I want, I'll bring it back as an agenda item. So I apologize for that. But Mr. D'Enzo, you can have the last word on this one if you like. I do withdraw my motion. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So what actually would be helpful for us is if we, for example, I don't mind presenting to the RNI again as a debrief of what happened here. I would appreciate their guidance on what an executive summary would look like, you know, mm-hmm. like what kind of, for example, what kind of an update would that look like every month that we sent to the board? Like, and we run it by the RNI committee, would this be helpful? Because, you know, I have criteria factors that I think should be in that monthly report, and to give a monthly update to the RNI, there really wouldn't be much of an update if we've already got the report set. So, but the initial summary, getting guidance on the initial summary, presenting that to the RNI would be helpful. So,
okay. And I don't know that we need a motion. Let me just make a suggestion. Is it possible, Vice President Dean, that you and Director Gray could work together to kind of come up with sort of a template or a list of or some direction that then could be passed on to Mr. D'Enzo as to how and what the executive summary should contain and how it should look? Is that and provide the kind of guidance that Mr. D'Enzo is asking? Is that something the two of you could work together on?
Yes, I'd be willing to work together with Director Gray on it, but is it more appropriate for RNI to work on this with Mr. D'Enzo?
I think it's more like Mr. D'Enzo and RNI, Vice President Dean, and maybe Melissa Bland as sort of the principals.
Okay.
Of course, General Manager Weigold, too. It's more at the staff level, I think. They have to work that out.
I think it would be helpful for us to sit down and have a Zoom meeting and discuss this and come up with a plan for an executive summary rather than make Mr. D'Enzo come to an RNI meeting.
Okay. So, Director Dean, can I leave that? Can we leave that in your hands to pursue that?
Sure. And is Mr. Weigold in agreement with this since he had a question before?
All the parties are in agreement. So I see Mr. Weigold in agreement. I think Mr. D'Enzo is in agreement. The idea is to help. We're not trying to throw in obstacles. We're just trying to help everybody understand. So, okay, we don't need a motion for that. If everybody is comfortable as to how we can go forward. And that will make me happy too. That will kind of satisfy me in terms of my concerns. Before we leave this item, one last shot, Director Farmer.
I just want to commend what Ray and his staff are intending to do moving forward, which I think members of the community have requested as well. I could be misinterpreting that, but the fact that not only will we be getting well levels every month or every 2 weeks, as the case may be, but we'll also be getting very accurate supply and demand figures, which in some ways might be even more important. So the fact that these are going to be available every month is going to be very helpful for the community, for the board, and so forth. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Yes, Director Dean.
I also would like to commend Mr. D'Enzo and Ms. Bland and Ms. Guernsey for all the work that they put into this report. It's very detailed, and I appreciate all the information that's in there. And I think it would be very helpful for the community to understand what the situation is with our water supply and demand. I also really like that interactive chart that you had in there.
Okay, Director Steidel.
Thank you, President Howell. And I would like to offer my thanks also to Mr. Danzo and to Ms. Bland, and for the efforts that they put forward in bringing the information and the detail and explanations, as well as their responsiveness to the board in finding to understand what it is that was being requested and desired for distribution to the community and the willingness of their participation in that. So thank them for that also.
Excellent. Yes. And I'll second all of that. Thank you so much. You know, Mr. D'Anzo, Ms. Bland, everybody else involved. So I think we then are ready to move forward to the next item, which is 7B. And before we do this, do we need a break at this point? We've all been here for 2 hours, or shall we continue?
I don't. President Howell?
Yes.
I'm sorry. May I just ask, for the record and for clarity, all motions were withdrawn. Do we all agree on that?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for asking. That was getting a little bit tangled.
Except the motion to submit the report.
Oh yeah, that one would do that.
I got that one.
Good. All right. So if we don't need a break at this point, I think we'll just charge forth. I think we can probably finish on time today.
So
I will see. Okay, so 7B, this is to adopt resolution 36-2022, implementing the governor's executive order, declaring a stage 2 water shortage, and establishing and implementing regulations thereto. So, GM Weigold, again, the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Howell. As you mentioned, Agenda 7B, staff recommends that the board discuss and consider adopting Resolution 36-2022, establishing a Stage 2 water shortage watch as directed by the governor's executive order N-722 and implementing recommended water response actions. We have some information added both for what happens in a stage 1 as well as stage 2, because stage 2 includes actions taken in stage 1. And again, have utilities manager D'Anzo standing by to take us through this a little bit more.
Okay, thank you, Jim Weigold. Again, I think we'll go ahead and let's have the presentation first and then follow with public comment. So, Mr. D'Anzo, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. So, in your screen, you should be able to see stage 2 water shortage watch presentation. Okay, so this is a carry forward from the annual water supply and demand assessment, because some of the factors that we would be using there is the premise for how we're recommending a stage 2 water shortage watch. So this table here is a summary of the information that I just provided for you in the annual assessment. Mm-hmm. So the takeaway from this is, we talked about the projected supply in the second line, and then we talked about the projected, let me change the cursor there. And then this is the projected demand up here in the top line, which I already presented in the previous. The takeaway from this that I wanted to reiterate is that the surplus, or actually in this case, the deficit would be 69 acre feet for the entire water year, assuming July through June. Even though, like the water year, other people think it's October to September, which it is. But for the purposes of our analysis, July to June, because of the dry year significance, which is what I also stated in the previous report. It's 13% of that reduction that we would need for the entire year cumulatively. So assuming extremely dry conditions. So as previously discussed, staff relied on start date of length of current historic dry seasons, as well as precipitation data for this analysis. So groundwater levels and other permitting conditions were also incorporated into this analysis, but those constraints will be more active and fluid as the dry season progresses. So meaning that this is an annual projection, but like we've already discussed, you know, we will be updating this monthly and be reassessing. So that's, but this is something that is an important slide to carry forward for this discussion. So if you remember that we needed a 13% reduction, and it would give us a 69.2 acre feet of deficit if we didn't reduce. So what this chart this graph shows is that, you know, we did an analysis on if we reduce 0%, 20%, 30%, 40%. So this basically represents stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. Stage 2 is recommending a 20% is the action that I talked about in the previous, and it's what I'm recommending today. The action of stage 2 is a 20% reduction that will cover that 69.2 acre feet deficit, because 20% will give us 108 acre feet reduction for the entire year. And also to put it in perspective, we also have in this graph and these two charts up here, this percent reduction of impacts on residential gallons per account per day. You know, this is not per person per day, it's per account, based on how we did the analysis. And then also on the right is the percent reduction of impacts on commercial gallons per account per day. So if we were to reduce, so right now the average is 78 gallons per day per account in residential, and 474.6 for commercial. If we were to get a 20% reduction on that, it would be 62.4 gallons per day per account, which is a manageable decrease in residential. And I also say that it is a manageable decrease also for commercial, since the community has already been very vigilant and is very cognizant of our water situation here. So as you can see, like to ask for a larger amount of savings or reduction, it really doesn't warrant it at this time. Will it warrant it later on in the as we progress, and if the situations become dire? If that were to happen, then we would definitely present a different recommendation. But as of now, the way it stands, a 20% reduction will get us to our goal, and it'll also provide a buffer. In here, so while we're currently trending, it's true that we are trending below average in the San Simeon Wellfield, as this graph shows, and what we've already showed you in the previous. It's also important to keep in mind what goes behind the scenes, because outside of that emergency transmission main failure that happened in January, which caused us to rely on the Santa Rosa Well number 4, like what Jim Green said in the previous, we have not pumped in Santa Rosa Well since. So we have not pumped in Santa Rosa Well since that time in January. Hence, there is a large, an artificial decrease of the well levels that trended as compared to last year. And I'm saying that not to minimize the situation, but I'm saying that is just, that's the situation, the operation of what we did that was different from last year. So 100% of our supply in January through June 1st came from San Simeon Well. But also note that there will always be a steady dry season decline, regardless of whether we use Santa Rosa or not. So also keep that in mind. But that's why I do want to present that as an explanation of what this graph shows and our interpretation of it. So one of the things, before I go there, some other things I wanted to say. I didn't talk about this left side of the graph. So on the left side, you'll see that the minimum San Simeon groundwater elevation in feet going all the way back to 1988. That's what this graph shows. But since the last 5 years of drought, which dramatically impacted our supplies in 2013, our minimum elevations have averaged 9.97 compared to 7.83 from 2000 to 2013, and 4.93 from the 90s to the late 80s. So this is something that we'll be watching closely throughout the dry season to make sure that we're keeping that minimum level within historic norms. Because also remember, something that we forget to state is that water use was significantly more prior to 2013 and earlier. What I mean by significantly more, it was our demand was closer to 800 acre feet, as opposed to right now, which we kind of are hovering right around 500 acre feet. So that's why these well levels went down a little bit quicker back in those days, prior to 2014. I believe that once that extreme drought happened, the good people of Cambria have changed their habits and have become more water conservation aware, and these habits have stayed and continuing to be cognizant, and because of it, we've seen an environmental change because of it. So, but that's definitely something that we would be keeping in track of, even these groundwater levels, to be sure that we are maintaining that our minimum average are not going to go past, what we've seen in the recent history. So the response, the planned shortage response actions that I've also stated in as part of our recommendations, is as shown in this chart in your packet, where there's all of the stage one recommendations, which will stay in place, and all the stage two recommendations, which will stay in place. Variances from the water shortage contingency plan include: number one, increased water waste patrols at each stage, and providing water use surveys at all times, which we're doing and people are taking advantage of. And also, we would also want to recommend providing rebates for plumbing fixtures and efficient irrigation at stage two. Normally, that wouldn't come till later, but we're hoping that that's something that we could implement here. Staff will also be recommending a ban on refilling cisterns with potable water from the CCSD water sources. So that's also a recommendation that's above and beyond stage one and stage two. And also keep in mind that we are a part of a joint task force, if you will, with the county, with other communities within the county, where we exchange ideas on different water conservation techniques that people have used in different parts of the county. And so I say that because good ideas are coming out of this committee. So other shortage response actions are being researched, and in case additional actions are required to achieve the necessary reduction in demand, we will bring that before your board. So some of these things that you see on this table that could be added, that could help achieve our goals a little bit better, we will bring those ideas before you at a later date. We already have a couple of ideas that we're thinking about, but we're hoping to bring those before you sometime soon. Also, so this particular slide now shows other planned conservation programs. So free templates for commercial lodging and dining establishments to advertise water shortage restrictions such as laundry opt-out and water service upon request. Also, free leak detection pamphlets with dye taps to check for toilet leaks. We are going to start going to farmers markets every other Friday again to help bolster this message. And also, we will have outreach at the Cambria Library during the summer, and also the school district during the fall. So these are some other planned conservation programs that we will be implementing as a result of the stage two resolution before you today. And that ends my presentation. So if for those in the community that have questions, just general questions about water conservation, our water conservation staff members, Melissa Bland is our program manager, and Mega Gersony is our admin tech. They're the ones that do the water efficiency walkthroughs. So, but if you have any just general questions about things that are available for water conservation that we already give away during farmers markets, feel free to call them. You don't have to wait till farmers market and catch us at the right time to do this. You're welcome to email them or call them if you have any questions about how you want to save water. But that ends my presentation. And again, I recommend that the board approve a stage two water shortage watch.
Okay, thank you, Mr. D'Anzo. Let's see, let us go. Okay, first of all, let's go back to our regular format here. First of all, just questions for clarification from the board, not opinions, but just clarification. Then we'll go to the public for public comment, but we won't do the back and forth like we were on the other item. Okay, yeah, Director Gray.
Thank you, President Howell. Yeah, just a quick question on the stage two rules. On car washing, it says it's only permitted using a commercial car wash that recirculates water or by high pressure / low volume wash systems. Does that mean a pressure washer? Or it used to be that you could use a hose with a shutoff at the end, but it sounds like that's precluded now. Am I correct in that?
Mr. D'Anzo, can you clarify?
Mr. D'Anzo, yeah, this is for Mr. D'Anzo.
Yeah, I'm trying to look to see. Melissa, do you have a quick answer for this?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, okay, good, thank you.
During
stage two, it would simply be using a commercial car wash or a high pressure, low volume, i.e. pressure washer.
Pressure wash.
Not a hose with a shutoff.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I see. Here it is. I was looking for the resolution, trying to see what we're going to actually vote on. Just a second. I do have one question for clarification. Regarding prohibiting the refilling of cisterns, how do you envision enforcing, how are you going to know that somebody is refilling a cistern, and how are you going to enforce it? I guess that would be for Mr. D.
Melissa has a really good answer for this. Yeah, she has.
We first came to know that this was an issue because we had a Flume customer that we were able to see his water use, his or her, and we observed a spike in water use that we thought might be a leak. And when we reached out, we were educated by the homeowner that the water was actually being used to fill the cistern on the property. We took the opportunity to note that and keep it on the shelf for future restrictions It's probably going to be an informational pamphlet that goes out to our larger properties that tend to have more irrigation use.
So you would tell based upon the a spike in the usage then? Is that what we're talking?
When we have access to the flume data, if they have flumes, and this is actually probably going to discourage people from putting them on, but when they have flumes or if we go to AMI, we're able to observe their actual, minute by minute. And in some AMI systems, it's like 15-minute intervals, but you could see the spike in water consumption literally going like a flow rate of, you know, nothing to 14 gallons a minute for 20 minutes, whatever it may be. So it's pretty easy to observe that type of use.
I see. That was what I was wondering. And the other thing, though, is when you find such a situation, how do you enforce it?
I think our code only allows us to do written citations. So we would just notify them if we have access to this data. In instances where we don't have someone who has a flume and we don't have AMI, it's going to be limited to just hoping that people comply.
Okay.
That's the case with most irrigation restrictions. We can't tell when people are really operating their drip unless we have that AMI data.
I see. Thank you. Do we even have an option of like reducing a property's a parcel's pressure, anything like that, or cutting their flow back?
No, we don't. Not at this time.
Okay. Just wondering. Okay. Let's see. The reason I'm a little confused here. Well, let's go to the public first, and then we'll come back and decide what we're voting on here. Director Gray, I think you had
I just had a follow up on Ms. Bland's answer. As a longtime flume user, is my data being watched by the CCSD?
Did you get the flume through a CCSD rebate?
No, actually, I'm pre-rebate.
No, we do have an agreement with Flume. So we have anonymous data for people who were not rebate customers. Mm-hmm. We do have access to the water use data for rebate customers.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's go to the public and then we'll come back, try to get a good clarity as to what we're voting on and then how we can move forward. So, okay, folks out there, Elizabeth Bettenhausen, would you please come in?
Thank you very much, President Howell. That was an interesting disclosure just now about your data being accessible to the CCSD if you got a rebate. So you sort of pay a little and lose a little in one sense. That's a joke. That's not serious. Don't take it serious. Okay. I do have a couple of serious points. In the list for stage two, what is the meaning of increased water waste patrols, end quotation? How is waste defined? And does this apply to commercial and residential as well as to internal accounts and certainly to vacation rentals? So that's a very vague phrase and I don't know what it entails. And I welcome more detail on that, probably not today, but in the near future, like next month. My second question is, and I found it very helpful what Engineer D'Enzo posted about the clarification of the estimation of demand and supply. And then at the bottom of that screen, it said water shortage evaluation criteria. They were not, so far as I can tell, in the in the agenda materials, although I apologize if they were and I didn't see them. But those four criteria are very vague. They are not at all clear in what's entailed in terms of data and assumptions, et cetera. So what are the water shortage evaluation criteria? For example, the first one is start of dry season. So are you continuing to define that the same way you have before the climate crisis? I think Director Farmer raised some interesting points there earlier. Then the precipitation data? What, I mean, that's pretty vague. How do you evaluate the precipitation data if you're using that as a criterion for determining if there's a water shortage, et cetera? I won't specify the my confusion in the, with the other two, but I think Director Gray raised a very good point about we need an executive summary. I would not call it that. I think we would need a little public communication, making clear what in the world you are dealing with. And I think your debates today have disclosed that it's not self-evident. And I would welcome then a clarification of what the criteria are and how they are used, by what procedure they are evaluated among the four of them, et cetera. In other words, I'd like to know. And I want to emphasize here again the importance of the commercial. If I looking at what the helpful thing that was posted about the reduction of residential use, you would have to go to stage 92 before it even applies to me, because I use 18.9 gallons per day. I want to repeat that. I use 18.9 gallons per day. And I don't show up anywhere there, friends. You got to be handing me water by the dishload, because I could then water some cactus too, maybe. But I raise this not to bring out my personal identity, although I think it's fascinating, but I raise it because just like last time you declared a big stage four, it was very confusing to the public how it applied to the frequency of water use and the amount of water use. If I use only 1.5 gallons every 2 months, do I have to save the same amount as somebody who uses 15? Or maybe your increased water waste patrols has to do with that. And anybody who uses what more than, well, the average is 78 units per day. My goodness, friends, you got to put some hard numbers, please, on this stuff. Otherwise, you can understand why somebody is not going to get a rebate on their little device, and they're going to fill their cisterns like they want to, or they're going to do what they like to do when they walk their dogs on Fiscalini. They say, everybody's doing what I do, and with a regulation, I won't use my language. Sorry, I'll stop right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vindenhausen. Scott Anderson, please.
Am I on? You can hear me? I just wanted to reinforce the request for executive summaries. I think a huge amount of progress could be made in the public understanding what's going on and buying into it and accept, you know, and lauding the work you folks do, if it were presented in a way that common folk could understand it. Common folk like me, that you know, enough said. An executive summary would be a huge help for you achieving your strategic goal of better communication with the public and just getting the point across. That's it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Henderson. Do we have any additional public comment? I don't see any so far. Leah, do we have any written comment?
No written comments.
Okay, thank you very much. So we're back to the board at this point. Let me just clarify one thing, because it did seem to be a source of confusion. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. D'Enzo, but the percentage, or Ms. Bland, the percentage reduction that you speak of, this is actually what we're talking about, is the whole community, not necessarily like... Am I correct in that? It's a 20% reduction overall, not that each
Yes. Must... Yeah, that's correct. That's yeah. correct.
So in terms of Ms. Bettenhausen, as long as she stays within her 18 gallons, yeah. she probably doesn't need to reduce any further, and she would still be whatever stage we're in, probably. Okay, I just wanted to get clarity on that, because that did seem to be a source of confusion. The other thing here, now, let me just give me just a minute to review the... okay, I'm just very quickly glancing at this, because it looks like staff may be asking for more than what's in the resolution. If I need some clarification from staff, we have, let's see, where's the rec? At the top of page 73 in the packet, let's see, it looks like, are you asking for board action on those bullet points? The ones that are here, staff recommends the board consider increasing waste patrols. So is that something that you need us to pass? Similarly, staff recommends the board consider providing high efficiency plumbing. Again, is that a separate issue? And the last one, consider prohibiting the refilling of water systems. Do those, because they don't seem to be covered in the resolution. So that's, can someone help me? Let me start with Mr. Carmel and then you, Mr. D'Anzo. Yes, Mr. Carmel.
They're included in Exhibit A on the very bottom.
Okay, I stand corrected then. Oh, I'm going to take your word for it. I didn't see them, but okay. Mr. D'Anzo, did you, is that what you wanted to tell me?
Yes, I was just going to tell. It's all within the resolution. Exhibit A is referenced, and all of that is referenced.
Ah, okay. In that case, we're good. So at this point, let's get a motion on the floor, and then if we need, and then we can go to debate from there. So, Director Seidel.
Thank you, President Howell. I move that we adopt Resolution 36-2022, implementing the governor's executive order declaring a stage 2 water shortage watch and establishing and implementing the regulations related thereto.
Excellent.
I second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Seidel, seconded by Director Gray to adopt Resolution 36-2022, implementing the governor's executive order declaring a stage 2 water shortage watch and establishing and implementing regulations related thereto. So now we are open for discussion. So let's see, I see Director Gray.
It might be actually an amendment, but I was trying to match the Exhibit A additional shortage response actions, which are 3 bullet points, with the 4 bullet points in the staff report. And I believe, I don't know if this makes a material difference, but the water use efficiency walkthroughs are currently offered at no cost to all customers. That doesn't seem to be something that's implemented, but it's listed as a step in the staff report. Is there any need to add that?
I put that in the staff report just so you were aware that was something we were doing above and beyond what the stage actions were calling for, but you don't need to authorize that.
Okay, so those three other bullet points are what are identical to what is added in Exhibit A.
Yes.
Okay. Just to repeat that, so staff to increase water waste patrols, district to provide high efficiency plumbing and landscape irrigation rebates and giveaways, budget permitting, and refilling of irrigation water systems with potable water from CCSD is prohibited. So are we all clear then? That was what I was looking for before. Okay, any other, any discussion, debate on this? It seemed to me, Mr. Director Farmer, that you wanted to speak to this item. Are you happy with, okay, go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks very much, President Howell. So I'd like to ask, with regard to water shortage contingency plan stage 1, which is what we've been in since I believe the beginning of the year. And the first items there, which this is on page 74, operators of hotels, motels, and other commercial establishments offering lodgings shall post in each room a notice of water shortage conditions encouraging water conservation practices. And I'm assuming that also includes vacation rentals. And so I'm wondering if this is being done. I remember there was a very stern effort being made in this regard back in 2014. And there were, you know, signs at the restaurants, you know, water only upon request. Some of the motels had notices or recommendations, not only at the front desk, but in each room with regard to lessening water use by shorter showers, not having linen and towels washed and so forth. I'd like to know, have we been utilizing these opportunities?
Okay, it looks like Ms. Bland.
Yes, so we've been preparing for this this stage, this increase in this severity of stages. So we have prepared templates for our hotels, motels, and they will be offered to vacation rentals. I'm not sure if they've been canvassed in the past. They are digital templates that can be customized, so people can put their own text, they can put their own logos. And then we are making the same ones, similar things available to restaurants to allow, you know, them to impose their own logo, their own marketing on them and print them themselves. We found we had hundreds of these left over from the 2013-14 era. And partly that was because when we've done walkthroughs through the community, we've noticed that the restaurants and primarily the commercial lodging is already actively pushing this message at the front desk, in the rooms. They've had their own licensed, like branded materials that they've made available. We are going to be working with, as Mr. D'Enzo pointed out, we're a part of what's called Partners in Water Conservation. We work with the county and some other agencies on water conservation programming. And we've been kind of sharing tips and templates on how to reach out to our vacation rental customers, because this is an issue countywide. So I think that addresses all of those points.
Thank you, Ms. Bland. Director Farmer, did you have some more? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I do want to make mention of the fact that I believe Ms. Bland, and I know that Mr. D'Enzo and his staff are hardworking and responsible people. But Ms. Bland just stated that the district is in the process of enforcing what it is that I just read. I hope I'm not misinterpreting what she said, but this is something that has supposedly been in operation since stage one was declared back at the beginning of the year. I have one other item to comment to make with regard to, I don't feel that stage two, which is watch. I think we're beyond a water shortage watch. I believe water shortage warning, which is stage three, is where we should be. And one of the main things that would be changing at that time would be being much more limiting in the amount of water that people can use for landscaping. And that is quite often the major use of water during the summer months. And I believe the sooner we get ahead of this and start limiting landscape watering in a very effective, as effective a manner as possible, the more water availability we'll have as we move into the late summer and early fall. Especially because, if I'm not mistaken, one of the things that was pointed out in the chart that Mr. D'Enzo offered in item 7A as well as 7B, when it's showing supply versus demand, for the entire rest of the year, supply is outstretching demand. Demand is outstretching supply. Pardon me for that mistake. So I think the sooner we start cutting back on demand, since demand is going to be higher than supply, according to this chart, for the remainder of the year and into next year, the sooner we get on top of this. And I think that's a warning, at least, and not just a watch. That's my personal take on it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Director Farmer. Let me see. Of the two, I think I'll go with Mr. D'Enzo first and then Ms. Bland.
I saw that Melissa beat me to the punch. But what I was going to say is, the board does have within the code the opportunity to impose other water conservation measures if you want to. So if you want to reduce irrigation, because right now, you know, the stage two does have, you know, watering three times a week for 15 minutes. If the board wants to increase that, they within the code can do that. But we don't have to go into a stage three warning to go that route.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. D'Enzo. Ms. Bland, was that what you were going to say as well? Okay. Is there any other commentary? or discussion? Oh, yes, Director Steidel. Excuse me.
Thank you, President Howell. I was just thinking that perhaps that the reference to the fact that we're implementing actually the governor's executive order on stage two, and I think the reference to water shortage watch is a function of perhaps what was defined in the governor's executive order, not so much that we're using an evaluation of watch, we CCSD. This is a description, demarcation of what the governor's order used in wording. And that's what we're having to implement. And I think that's why the term showed up.
Okay. Thank you, Director Steidel. Anybody else? Okay. Okay, let me see. We have a motion on the floor, I believe. So if there's no further debate, we are ready for the roll call.
If I could just, I'd like to make an amendment since we are making a motion to approve water shortage stage two. I'd like to make an amendment to it that, and I believe Mr. D'Enzo just alluded to this, that we as a board can kind of, how could we say it, make adaptations to this particular water shortage watch. And I would like to amend this particular item to include that we more severely limit landscape watering to perhaps one day a week or 2 days a week. I'd like to think we should go to one day a week right now before it gets like really hot and the plants can deal with one day a week, because they're going to have to adapt pretty quickly to it's going to get warmer and they're going to have less water available. So I think the sooner we jump on top of this, the better off we'll be. So I would like to make an amendment that we more limit landscape watering as reflected in stage three. Let me just put it that way.
Thank you. So we limit the watering to that described in stage three. Is that correct, Mr. Farmer, Director Farmer?
That's probably the closest we're going to get to what I would like to have. So yes.
Go ahead, Mr. D'Enzo. We don't have a second yet on this, but I wanted, if there was clarity that you could add to.
The clarity stage three irrigation is 2 days a week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ms. Director Farmer, is that satisfactory? 2 days a week.
He can recommend one.
I can recommend one. We don't have to follow like a stage three irrigation. Is what you want, we can.
I would recommend us 1 day a week, which is stage four. I know that people in the community are already making every effort, whether it's saving shower water or whatever, and trying to water their indoor and outdoor plants, so to speak. But as I said, I think we really need to be more we really need to stress saving water in this area, since that's where we usually wind up saving water usage as we move into the summers.
Okay. Yeah. Right now it's just a matter of getting clarity as to the motion. Then we can do the for and against. So I think what we're saying is that you'd like to amend the resolution to include that landscape watering be limited to 1 day a week. So that would be the modification to the resolution. Okay, let's see if we get the amendment through, and then we can worry about how actually where it appears in the resolution, Mr. Carmel. So do we have a second on that? Not seeing anybody. One more time, everybody.
So what if I amend it to stage three landscape water conservation to 2 days a week? Can we make that amendment?
Well, let's see if you can get a second. Do we have a second on that one? All right, it is. We have a second now. It's been moved and seconded that.
I have to accept that in terms of the original motion?
Only if you don't want to vote on the amendment. So, in other words, let us vote on the amendment unless you're because if you don't approve of the amendment, you definitely don't want to accept it, and you'll want to vote against it. But yeah, you don't have to accept it because this is a hostile amendment. So, or not a hostile, but it's not a friendly amendment. So so right now
it's actually being very friendly to the environment and to Mother Earth and to everyone that lives here.
Absolutely. So at this moment, it's been moved and it's been moved and seconded that the resolution 36-2022 be modified such that landscape watering shall be prohibited, shall be limited to 2 days a week. All right. So is there discussion on the amendment? All right. I'm not seeing any discussion. So we're ready for the question on this one. So again, I'll repeat the motion one more time as we're calling for the question is, shall we, is the amendment is to include a restriction that the landscape watering shall be limited to 2 days a week. So we're ready. Okay. Mr. Gray.
By way of discussion, my problem with jumping, you know, getting ahead of staff on this essentially is, first of all, I think the real limitation in irrigation that matters is how long you water, how much time is spent watering, and how much volume of water is delivered, not the number of days of the week. So I'm a little bit reluctant to jump to 2 days a week for maybe symbolic reasons, whatever, and nothing else, because I'm not sure it would fit the strategy that we have right now. And also, it's not a really, as to say, precise way of controlling landscape water use. That's why I'm going to be voting against the amendment.
Okay, good. I any further debate? Any for or against on this one? Anybody else want to take a shot? Okay.
Well, I'll say that since obviously Director Gray used a little bit more forethought here than myself, and he's absolutely correct. Not only should we be limiting the days, but limiting the amount of time that people should be able to water. Okay. So, I don't know if I can therefore amend my amendment to making it, let's say, 2 days a week, either 5 or 10 minutes per station. But I have a feeling that I'm not going to get a lot of support no matter what I'm doing here.
So. Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All right. Let's try again. So now we'll call it. The question is that on the amendment. So we're voting.
I'm sorry. And I know this is going to sound like it's, we're going back to 7A when that just kind of droned on. But it seems like it's going to be more confusing if I go ahead and say, okay, we're limiting it to 2 days a week. And let's say 8 minutes per station. This is probably going to get more confusing. I think the other directors are probably already a little bit fed up with the fact that I'm even emphasizing this. So I will withdraw my motion.
Okay. You need permission of your second. Vice President Dean, do you allow him to withdraw the motion?
Sure. I water every other week, so it doesn't matter to me.
Okay. So the motion is now no longer on the floor. But now, before we go on, I don't think that a director should feel that just because everybody might be disagreeing with them, that they should not be reluctant about bringing their opinions forward. So don't be shy about that. That's really quite all right. Okay, we're ready for the vote then. So the motion is to approve Resolution 36-2022. To declare, I'm just going to read the title, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District declaring a Stage 2 water shortage watch condition. All right. Yes, you're ready for the roll call, Leah.
All right. Director Steidel.
Aye.
Director Steidel, aye. Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer.
Well, since I don't believe this is strict enough, I'm voting no.
Okay. Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye. And President Howell?
Aye.
President Howell, aye.
Okay. We have 4-1. Motion passes with Director Farmer in dissent. We are now ready for, we got 7C yet. Let's, do we need to extend?
15 minutes?
15?
4:15.
Okay. I'm going to assume that's a motion to go till 4:15.
Motion to extend 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We're at 3:54 now.
Okay. 4:15?
Yeah.
4:15. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. We go to 4:15. I'm asking for unanimous consent. Anybody object? Don't raise your hand. Okay. It's 5-0. The decision's unanimous. So let's just move direct now to 7C, which is to adopt Resolution 39-2022, authorizing employee contributions to the district's 401A deferred compensation plan. So, GM Weigel, the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Howell. As you mentioned, Agenda Item 7C is a resolution authorizing employee contributions to the district's 401A deferred comp plan. Staff recommends that the board discuss and consider adoption of this resolution authorizing employees to contribute to the district's 401A plan. In the discussion, I just want to simply emphasize that this is employee contribution. The district makes no contribution to this. Per the resolution, it's authorizing to contribute 20% of salaries.
Great. Does it say?
Depending on your questions, I'll turn it back to you, President Hill.
Thank you, GM Weigel. So first of all, questions for clarification from the board? Seeing none, let me go to the public. Folks out there in the audience, do you have any comment on this? All right, I'm not seeing anything so far. While we're waiting for just a minute, Leah, could you check and see if we have any written comment?
I'm sorry, there is no written comment.
No problem. No need to apologize. Thank you. No written comment on this item. So we're back to the board for discussion. Again, to move things along, let's start with a motion and see if we can't do it that way. Director Gray.
Yeah, I move we adopt Resolution 39-2022, authorizing employee contributions to the district's 401A deferred compensation plan.
Thank you, Director Gray. Director Steidel, is that a second?
It is.
Excellent. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 39-2022, authorizing employee contributions to the district's 401A deferred compensation plan. And we're now open for discussion. Yes, Director Steidel, or is that still your second hand? No. Okay, anybody else? Nobody? Okay. Again, so everyone fully understands, all we're doing is allowing our employees and certain specified employees to contribute 20% of their annual salary to this particular plan for their retirement. Okay, I think we are ready for the question if there is no discussion. So again, Leah, the motion is to adopt Resolution 39-2022, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the CCSD authorizing district employees to contribute to the district's 401A deferred compensation plan.
Okay, and Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Steidel.
Aye.
Director Steidel, aye. Director Farmer.
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Vice President Dean.
Aye.
Vice President Dean, aye. And President Howell.
Aye.
President Howell, aye.
Motion passes 5-0. All right, we are now ready for item 8C, which is, infrastructure. Director Steidel, you have your hand up.
I do. President Howe, I'd like to suggest something. There's one more ad hoc report that myself and Director and Vice President Dean were bringing forward that we had committed to the board that has to do with strategic planning. And it was going through its final formalizations, just in terms of this initial report, as late as, the last 48 hours. So I would like to suggest that we take that before we take the written reports, which are part of the package already. These could be made a part of the agenda, and I'll be happy to forward these also as a Word document to the other directors immediately, so you have it for more reference. But it's only a couple of pages, and if you don't mind, and Vice President Dean, with your approval also, I think maybe if we could do that ahead of the others, it would be appreciated.
Thank you for mentioning that, because that is an important item, and it might actually entail a very small amount of discussion. So we want to be sure we have plenty of time to deal with that. And I know the two of you have worked quite hard on this. So this is, just to kind of introduce this, this is a report from the ad hoc subcommittee on modifying or reviewing and modifying our strategic planning process, I think would be the best way to describe it. This was a ad hoc committee that I took the liberty of appointing, as I am allowed to do from time to time, in between meetings and so forth. So, and the ad hoc committee consisted of Vice President Dean and Director Steidel, and they have been communicating with our facilitator, Marilyn Snyder, on these issues as well. So, Director Steidel, I believe you wanted to present.
Okay. Well, I'll defer to Vice President Dean if she would prefer to be the presenter.
Well, since my voice is not...
Your voice is given. Okay, fine. I'll be happy to do that then if you would like. Okay, thank you. So just in summary, what we were doing is bringing forward this report to consider some transitions from our current strategic planning processes. And as an ad hoc committee, we were advocating a need to move forward to a different path for our goals and strategies that really reflect the work content and the challenges that we have ahead of us as a district. And the intent is to being able to meet and resolve the needs and challenges, and that should be our vision for the district's strength and future health. So the reasons for refocus. Our current goals aren't aligned to our services. Some of that is a disconnect just because we've had some significant changes in moving forward with things that we're doing in different areas of the district. And as a result, we don't currently have goals which really reflect the work content and the commitments necessary to execute the things that we need to do. We felt that really getting goals redefined to meet the forward progress of things that we had set out for ourselves to do would help better to keep us focused. And Leah, if you could advance the sheet, please. Okay. So, yeah, let me move this for myself for reading purposes. So we're considering that if we realign our goals to be more objective, it would also provide a focus for the general manager and the staff to and support communications of our expectations and visions. And that as a whole, as a board, we have not been effective in communicating those expectations of the end game to the community. And we felt that it was leaving an uncomfortable feeling of fragmentation. And we had heard that several times from people who have spoken publicly at the meetings. So in terms of reassessment, when we initiated the process, one of the things that may have been a stumbling block for us is that we probably targeted the level of participation in too wide a swath. And there are a lot of folks who provided a lot of great input, but being outside the governing body, they were involved in some basic formulations that they may not have understood the implications of necessarily. And we ended up with kind of a diluted focus of our district mission. And we felt that the current mission statement would benefit by being a little more declarative and really addressing what the requirements of our district are in terms of our authorities. So we assessed that our current goals aren't currently aligned to our services, and that creates kind of a disassociated focus and a disconnect in the actions and plans. And we thought that the current process and methodologies that we're using kind of fragmented communications of the actions of the board members, because it wasn't necessarily the board members who were establishing the goals. I mean, granted, we were involved in the final approval of them, but the formulation of the goals weren't necessarily being assumed by the board members themselves. And as a result, we felt that the the process needed to get the focus of the dialogue and the sharing of the views with all of the board members simultaneously, and the big breakout groups as a process were counterproductive to us. Thank you, Leah. So in terms of our suggestions, in taking a look at this, we looked at other special districts and how they handle their strategic planning, the kinds of methodologies that they use for setting their goals. And one that we ran across seemed to be particularly effective in establishing their strategic goals, because what they did is orient them to their areas of service. So it really directed itself to, okay, what are the things that we need to do to be successful, and what kind of requirements or challenges have we taken on for ourselves in these specific areas? And by keeping it aligned to things like water and sewer and fire and administrative and things more directly identifying who we as a district are and what our obligation is in provision of services could be of a real benefit to us. It would help us establish what our goals are and then the strategies to make those goals. So the resulting strategies, if we took it in that direction, would reach the service area goals. Now let's see, the resulting strategies to reach the service area goals would be focused on the district needs and obligations, and they represent the active forward planning to get there and actually heighten the success of what we would have in the work that we're doing. So we would, in essence, be making a plan, working the plan, and being proactive instead of reactive, because the goals would help define the parameters within which we would expend our energies of the board and of the staff, and it would be directed to real-term concrete items that we need to be executing. So our recommended next steps that we would like to bring to the board for right now is in going through our strategic planning, as we will be very soon, that we'd have taken the opportunity to review our mission statement and restate it as necessary to have it provide a declarative statement of our district responsibilities, and to develop a refocused set of goals on the district's areas of responsibility, the things that we provide to the community. Determine what needs to be or is expected to be accomplished in each area. If we go through and define that for ourselves, it will help us immediately identify the strategic actions that we need to take to satisfy our goals. And Leah, could you advance it one more time, please? And then by using those needs and expectations, we can get strategic actions to accomplish and attain our goals, as I has just said. So, and once we go through that as a, you know, suggested new process that we would use for strategic planning, then we could go back and look at the mission statement one more time, just as a validation point, just as a touchstone, to see if there's anything that we didn't cover initially that the goal setting has highlighted. So that's kind of a very broad brush stroke feedback of the kind of things we took a look at and the kinds of concerns that we as two people in an ad hoc committee had regarding the forward movement of strategic planning that we do. And I also was in response to things that we would hear from the community, both of us, in terms of getting something more specific and focused regarding our strategic planning, and that the strategic planning really needed to reflect the execution of our responsibilities and how we were going to do them. And that's what our goals are. So I will go ahead and certainly make this available to everyone. And Director Dean, or Vice President Dean, please jump in.
Yes. Go ahead, Vice President Dean.
So as Director Steidel said, we went through several other community services districts and looked at the way that they worded their mission statements and their goals and how they operated in forming their strategic plan. And the ones that seemed the most successful were the ones that focused on the services that they provide for the community. So we went and we looked at LAFCO to see what our assigned active powers were. And according to LAFCO, their water, sewer, solid waste, fire protection, street lighting, parks and recreation, transit, and Veterans Memorial Administration. We have a lot of things that need to be done in these service areas. And we kind of felt like it would be more effective for us to focus on these specific areas of responsibility that we have. What needs to be done in water, what needs to be done in wastewater, what needs to be done with the WRF, the fire protection finance, you know, make our goals specific to our areas of responsibility and make our mission statement effectively stating what our area of responsibility is. We also talked about the breakout sessions and, you know, really the goal setting needs to be done by the board. And in the breakout sections, we're all separated out away from each other. And we really don't have a really good method of communication, I don't think. And so we were talking about possibly working on this rather than doing breakout groups, working on this as a group, just a group among ourselves, a group, just the directors, the general manager, and the executive staff. Mm-hmm. The department heads are going to have to help us determine what is needed in each of these areas and how they need to be executed, what kind of strategy needs to be done to accomplish what they need in each of these departments. And so that's kind of what we've been working on. And our facilitator seems to be in agreement with what we're talking about, but we're waiting for input from the board. And I think we'd like to put this a full discussion consideration of this plan on the next meeting's agenda, if that's at all possible, so that we can let Ms. Snyder know what the agenda needs to look like.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you, Vice
President. We may need to extend for a few minutes at least.
Let's go
4:30. Guys, I had a quick question actually too.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's formally extend. So it's been moved and I second it that we extend till 4:30. Anybody object? Asking for unanimous consent. Okay. Motion passes 5-0. And so now we're back. We'll go to 4:30. So, yes, Director Gray.
Thank you. Vice President Dean and Director Steidel is a very, very thoughtful, great, you know, analysis, I think, of the problems we have with strategic planning. I'm particularly, a couple of questions occurred to me. One is that was a problem with the breakout groups that there are just too many people involved? Or could you still have breakout groups, small groups within the board, like ad hoc size, to deal with stuff that's more very specialized? Or could you, or would everything have to be done with all five board members simultaneously in your in the idea you have for changing things?
Okay, either one of you, Director Seidel, I think Director Seidel's got the voice, so
I'll give it. I don't know. It sounds like mine's going to. A leftover, I think, still of coming out of. I'm inclined. I mean, my inclination is to do it as a group, at least initially. If we find that that the conversations that happen as a group kind of lend themselves to saying, okay, why don't you, director so-and-so, break off? Yeah. And why don't you run this to ground a little bit and bring something back that we can address for, you know, singular or, you know, one or two, you know, ways to pursue it. But I think initially we need to be able to share that as a whole, mm-hmm. as a board, because as a board, we're the ones who need to be defining these things, and we need to understand what each other thinks of what the goals represent, because we can use words, but until we have some conversations about it, we can assume. And one thing that brought that home to me is that one of the special districts did something that I thought was extraordinarily effective. And what they did is they took their core values, and they didn't just come up with words. They came with a sentence or two for each of those words that represented what they as a board felt was the significance of that word and how it affected what they did in their work. Or what their obligation was. This is, and they were declarative. We are, you know, we this, we that. And it was kind of an eye opener. And both Director Dean and I went through and did that with our core values, mm-hmm. just as an exercise to see what that was like. And it was hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really difficult without just coming up with some, you know, $2 words or something to describe something that really carries quite a bit of gravitas if you are associating personal value to it. So yeah, it's I think bottom line, I think the conversation is important.
Another question is
let me recognize you, Director.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah. I didn't want to get somebody else's way. What among our current strategic goals to you is off base in terms of this idea of focusing on services? Where are we going astray, essentially?
A brief answer, but we're starting to stray into discussion a little bit.
Yeah, Director Dean and I can provide when we come back to next, if this is something that we put on next meeting agenda, is perhaps come in with some examples of what our thinking is, yep. in this regard, and maybe that will help address the question you've just asked.
That would help the discussion. I think this is a very, 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 very productive, useful exercise. So I think I salute what you're doing. It's great.
Absolutely. And Director Gray, that was a good question, because what we're doing here, and it is already on next week's agenda. So it will.
Thank you.
Yeah, the idea here was to get you guys to come to us and tell us your thoughts, and then take any, like what Director Gray just asked. So we know now we need some. Okay. Yeah. When we get to next week, we can have a really good, solid, productive discussion. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. So any other points, clarifications? Yes, Vice President Dean.
I think we've already accomplished a lot with the strategic plan we've been doing in the last couple of years with Marilyn. And I think we've learned a lot from it. We've completed quite a few things, but I think we need to kind of refocuses what our actual services are for the community, what our actual areas of responsibility are for the community. And you know, I really would appreciate a full discussion. And you know, Director Steidel's correct, coming up with definitions of core values. I went to 75 websites just trying to figure out one word. but we can have a more thorough discussion with, you know, and bring you some examples if you'd like us to next week.
That'd be good.
Great. Excellent. Anything else? Any other thoughts? Oh, yes, Director Farmer.
I just want to commend Vice President Dean and Director Steidel on their hard work in this effort that they've taken upon themselves. And it's obviously, I would hope, it's certainly in the long run going to make the board and the district operate more effectively. And so hats off to them. I can't even imagine, considering they went to a number of other districts to assess how they were dealing with strategic planning and core values and that type of thing. I can't imagine how much time they put into this. So my hats off to you two ladies. Thank you so much.
Yes. And I take my hat off too. So, indeed, thank you very much for that. So I think as long as everybody, okay, so your assignment for next week is to review the document that Director Steidel is going to send around to us all and maybe develop some other thoughts and questions. We can close this discussion. If anybody has any final, just it could be sort of a general thought, and I think I probably do have to go to the public on this. So let's hear from anybody else that has anything, any other thought they want to share that maybe Director Steidel and Vice President Dean, as they go back and get ready for our next meeting, that you'd want them to think about. Okay, not seeing anything. The only thing I'll say is I'm totally in favor of dispensing with the breakout session. I think they were very useful for what they did, and they did help us do some team building. We can all tell now we all like each other, and we're all working together, and that's what Marilyn was trying to get us into that sort of a state. So I think I'll go to the public, though. I do need to give them, and it's also helpful for us, I think, to let's hear if they have anything to say that will help in our discussion next week. So, Michael Calderwood. Well, Michael, I see you there.
Still muted.
Yes, you're muted.
There goes. Boy, I was really on a roll there, too. Apologies.
Yeah.
I just want to say outstanding work, not just the work product, but the thought that went into it and the real seriousness in which this was undertaken and the steps that you took are just terrific. I understand it's a terrible juggling act between community involvement and driving to what the community wants, which is an effective, hardworking, action-oriented board and staff. So this will be a huge help in getting there. It's not, I hope folks don't take the comments about the breakout sessions and the over-involvement as a negative about the community, but rather more, we got it, we heard it, and now we're going to take that to the next level and use all of these good processes and good thoughts to drive to what everybody wants, right, which is optimum government. So thank you for the excellent work.
Thank you, Mr. Calderwood. Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Yes, good afternoon, Board. The only thing I want to say is that with the strategic planning, I believe one of the goals was better communication with the public. I hope we don't drop that goal. In fact, I hope we expand it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Swartz. Is there any additional comment? I see, okay, none, and Leah, I doubt that we have anything in there from, that's anybody commenting on any of the reports.
There is none, no comment.
Okay, I think then we're almost finished here. The other reports are written. I don't know that we need to, unless somebody wants to make a point or bring something forth, they can stand as they are. Do I see anyone wishing to expand on any of their reports? Okay. Seeing none, I'll give a very short oral progress report on the ad hoc to review the historical costs of the WRF. Director Farman and I have decided that we'll bring that forward after the close of the fiscal year. So this will be in a July meeting. So for those of you out there in the audience who are waiting on the edge of your chair for that one. So anything else, any other points before we go to future agenda items? Okay. I suppose, does the public have any comments on any of the reports? Okay, seeing none, I think we're ready for future agenda items then. Does anybody have anything? Seeing none, I don't have anything either. I think it's actually our plate's going to be, next week's going to be very interesting discussion, and it should be very productive. I'm looking forward to it. So thanks again for our various ad hocs, you know, and Director Dean, Vice President Dean, Director Steidel, and their work. And then we had Director Farmer and Director Gray doing work, which we had a report from last time. And I think there's still an ongoing issue with the fire issues, things that you guys are working on. So everybody, you're doing fine. And we only went a little bit over, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. So I hope you have too. So I look forward to seeing you all again next week. And at this point, I think we are ready to adjourn. So thank you, everybody. Thank you. And hope everybody feels better next week.
Okay. Everybody have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.